This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend
confirmed. Ignition. Liftoff.
Welcome in, everybody. Hope you're having a fantastic day whenever you're listening to this episode of Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee. Have an awesome cast here around the Studio B here. The Atlantis Group with me, Mr. Jeff Cannata, rocking the classic Mac t-shirt.
I want to say may the 4th be with you all if you're listening to this on Saturday. Or Saturday.
Dude, yeah. Cinco de Mayo is Sunday. Right. Hope you're ready to get your margarita and Corona party on. I am definitely set for that. That would be indie Jeff Mattis there going as equaling. He's going one for one on t-shirt war here with his Infocom.
Yes, t-shirt. I'm entirely text-based today.
You were also eaten by a GRU.
I was in the dark.
Yeah.
Excellent. This all ties into my having finished Ready Player One, by the way, which was fantastic.
I thought the end was a letdown.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
All right, anyway, that's why he doesn't do book reviews, except for when he does. And Mr. Ozymandias is here as well.
Ozymandias.
Mejia.
Ozymandias. Call him Ozymandias from now on.
You're going to get my name right one of these days.
I'll never probably get it right.
No, dude, your new nickname is Ozymandias.
I like that, actually.
Mahita, whatever.
You didn't get the reference, do you? Mahita.
Just as long as
I get the reference, Jeff.
As long as it's not the Ozzy Osbourne vocal skills, I think we'll be fine.
I hear that one way too many times.
It might be on a crazy train.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Wow. So it's way too... We can't be going down that road yet.
Okay.
Okay. He says as he blindly drives the truck right down the musical reference channel. All right, so what did you not like about the Ready Player One ending? By the way, Ready Player One was the book
that
you were talking
about. I'm not
going to
talk about the ending of a book that people haven't
read. Spoiler alert!
Dude, yeah. It's been out for a while. You can talk. I would say this.
No, I won't.
I loved that book, and especially having read that book and finishing it right before playing Blood Dragon was kind of like an awesome 1-2 punch of killerness.
Anybody that wants to check out my review of that book and many others can check out my profile on Goodreads.
But I
enjoyed a lot of that book. I found the ideas to be fantastic, and the ideas I think are far better than the plot and characters, which are flimsy at best. But that's not to take anything away from
characters.
Right. Yeah, I mean it's
dude. All I cared about was the fact that, and you have to understand, especially for my age, it was as if I wrote the book.
Right, and I think you and I are both in that wheelhouse of remembering the 80s well and loving the 80s. And I think the book is a really great ride and well worth reading, but I think it collapses a little bit under the weight of its own nostalgia, because it almost, there's sequences where it's just like, really? You're just doing that because of the reference. There's really no reason to be doing that.
So I guess we kind of disagreed. I kind of loved that it just like made a giant swimming pool of like everything out of that Malou and said, okay, I'm jumping in and I'm swimming and gargling and bathing and everything else in it.
Yeah.
And I was cool with that. I was totally cool with that.
I just wish there wasn't sort of a tacked on love story and a pat ending. But
which, by the way, fits perfectly with all of the 80s era rom-coms that followed that same plot line.
Okay.
That it was, that's almost
again,
like,
I enjoyed the book. I
you
just
know what?
Didn't think it was a 5-star.
It was probably a metaphor.
What's a metaphor? For pooping, stupid.
I'm sure that I'll have something new
during the show.
I'll have a new
pronunciation. I almost said something and I went, Jeff, you're always that guy.
No,
don't be that guy.
It's fine.
This week.
You know what? That's
And you know what? The internet
this
was that guy.
Well, that's fine. You know what? This is as simple for me as like people who say warsh.
Warsh.
Or have you ever heard oranges?
Oranges. Yes. Mm. I mean, I know it's four.
At least there's an R in more.
Hold
oranges.
On.
Yeah,
I will slowly pronounce metaphor.
It's fine, dude. We're moving on.
Now spell it. No.
We got video games to talk about.
Medaphour. Yes.
Yes.
Spelling bee winner. Awesome.
The sequel to Meta 3.
So what do we have to talk about? We have Blood Dragon, which you definitely want to talk about. I played some Neverwinter. We have...
I played a bunch of Marvel Heroes beta.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Hopefully you were digging on it. There's a lot of people who are excited for that game.
Mm-hmm.
And We have the Grand Theft Auto trailers that came out this
trilogy
week.
Trilogy of trailers.
Trilogy of trailers. We have Nintendo, just after we finished recording last week, bailing out on E3. Not bailing
crazy.
Out, but...
crazy.
Yeah, like...
going smaller scale, which
abdicating the throne.
Right.
And it is abdicating the throne, because if you saw Cess's tweet on G4, the Nintendo press conference, regardless of what you think about the like quality level of it, was always the number one ratings hit.
Oh, yeah? And... I wonder how, I mean, we can start talking about that right now if you want.
I wonder
how much that.
It is E3 season. I mean, look, it's May 1st now. It is the beginning of E3 season. You've got 3 weeks to the Xbox unveil.
And that's what I was just about to bring up, is I wonder if that says more about Nintendo or if it says more about E3, and if it's sort of a death knell for E3 in the sense that we have PlayStation, and we have Sony, and we have Microsoft both pulling a Apple/Samsung and having their own events in the weeks ramping up to E3. Is E3 not necessary anymore? Is the fact that these companies can and often prefer to speak directly to their audiences rather than being filtered through the conventions? That's what I did there.
I'd like to see it go to completely being a software-based show instead of a hardware show because of these events that they're, you know.
Right.
On the Nintendo point, I don't know what they would announce at this point, right? I mean, they've already teased a Zelda that's a million years away and some other stuff. And I mean, what would they say?
But do you doubt their ability to trot those things back out once
again?
That's
a sad commentary to say when they have just launched two new systems, basically, in the last, year and a half, that they don't have much to talk about.
Well, right, but they've already talked about it at their Nintendo Direct stuff. So like
Well, that's the whole point, is that all these companies are doing the equivalent of direct messaging to their audiences rather than needing a press to deliver that message. We have the technology now just to say, right, well, we're just going to talk directly to our audience.
I mean, it's possible that they have another big franchise bomb that they want to drop, but my guess is if they drop that, it'll be, you know, months and months and months and months away. You know, like there isn't anything to get super excited about that you could get your hands on. Or,
but that's a bad sign for Nintendo. They need some excitement coming out of
They need something to match up with Sony and Microsoft, because the Wii U's been underperforming. And sure, they've just shown off a bunch of stuff for 3DS a couple of weeks ago, but they've shown almost nothing for the Wii U, and there's nothing to get excited about on that end. And they're going to get crushed this holiday season if they don't show anything.
Crushed. I'm not sure about crushed. I mean, never underestimate Nintendo's ability to market to middle America. I mean, they were super successful with the Wii campaigns. They still have the flagship mascot-based titles that are the bread and butter of the classic video game market, right? Like, they still have Mario. They still have Yoshi. They still have Kirby. They still have Look, they're going to bring a Mario Kart out. Are you telling me that you think that with a Mario Kart they're going to get crushed?
This isn't the first time that they've looked down and out. I mean, around the GameCube time, people thought that they were struggling. People thought they were struggling with the Wii, and they'd always bring something out. But this is the first time that they've actually sort of waved the white flag going into E3 and saying, "Yeah, we're just going to take a step back." And that shouldn't be the reaction to Sony and Microsoft bringing out the big guns.
I don't know that I completely agree. I think that in this case, when you don't have that big story to tell, what would be worse, taking the stage and not having a story to tell, or not taking the stage, having your booth, showing those things that you've already talked about in playable form, where people will cover them and be excited about them, and carrying on about business?
Unless you look at your stable of what you have and what's ready to go on the show floor, and you're like, we don't really have anything ready yet.
They'll have vertical slice stuff ready.
The problem is not having the story to tell, isn't it?
Yes.
The problem is that gamers are hungry for a story to be told, and they don't seem to have that.
And the things you're hearing now out of Nintendo is that they're just starting to get this idea in their head of, you know what? We didn't tell a good story with the Wii U. I mean, when they have to come out and admit, you know, there's a lot of people who didn't realize that it wasn't just a new controller for the Wii. Well, that's a pretty clear statement of, wow, we just like...
They actually had to send that to their Wii customers.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's a big admission of, we didn't tell the story well. We didn't get out there ahead of things. And then, I mean, as we all have seen, they didn't have the software to back it up, right?
Yeah. And
I mean, I'm still anxious to see the Wonderful 101, but I really thought that by May 1st of this year, the Wonderful 101 would be here.
I mean, I can't believe we're going to be seeing Pikmin 3 again. That should have been out by now.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, that's all fine and dandy. If you know, if they want to bake the game longer, I say more power to them. And I enjoy when games come out that are done.
Yes.
But the fact that there might not be other things to show, we want to get, you know, we want to have a full stable here. And I think the tacit commentary that they're sort of revealing is we're not. There's these three big pillars of companies that have always held up E3:
Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft.
And if sort of the tacit admission is we're not that third pillar anymore, or at least this year we're not. And especially when you have the other two coming out full bore with brand new hardware and hoping to wow everyone, it's a strange stance, I think, to take to say.
I don't think they're standing in the middle of the freeway and getting run down by Xbox Infinity or whatever the hell the name of it is,
Xbox.
And PlayStation 4 is necessarily a good idea. Them going out there and going, let's do a press conference. We'll show you Zelda again. We'll show you Mario again. We'll show you Kirby again.
Maybe.
They have stuff they could bring out. Teaser for Smash Brothers, next Mario Galaxy. They have stuff up their sleeve.
And they will do those things, and they'll do them in their booth. And they were, keep in mind, it's Nintendo. They're still going to get great coverage. People are still going to flock to their booth. The coverage from all of the gaming sites is still going to be very intense on what's inside the booth, what's playable. And that really is where they are right now.
It kills me that they're running into the same problem that they've run into for the last three consoles now, and that's third-party support. I can't believe it's happening again. EA came out today and said no Madden for Wii U this year.
Yeah, no Madden for Wii U. 25th anniversary of Madden and no Madden.
Which,
on-
hello, if there was ever a game that would have taken advantage of that game tablet and like play calling and crazy draw your own plays up or whatever, I mean, that was a lot of opportunity.
I love that about Madden 12 on the Wii U. I looked at it over the holiday season, and the only thing I didn't like about it is it was running last year's engine. But
and where do you lay blame for that, though? This is not Nintendo's fault that they did not turn in a good game. It's EA Sports' fault.
Well, right. it's EA probably looking at it and going, well, we could do something entirely from scratch, or we can figure out a way to introduce some cool Wii tablet functionality into an existing game. And given how much, you know, they're very iterative. They're always working on the next year's episode, so.
Look, I disagree with you guys about the third-party support. I think Nintendo has proven over and all that they are able to weather third-party support deficiencies. They've done it in prior generations. I think the problem still is they didn't tell a great story, and they're still not giving you that great game that exploits the fantastic things they could do with the pad. And I'm using that as like their thing. Whether there are fantastic things or not, I'll leave for someone else to decide. But they got to show me why it's awesome. And so far, the only thing that has done that in great, you know, in the strongest way is probably
Monster Hunter.
Yeah, you think so? Well, not Zombie U?
Okay, so I might give you Zombie U.
I think Zombie U is where it's at, and the asymmetrical multiplayer in that game, very cool, very very unique, right?
Nintendo's problem right now is not that they need more mind share, because they have that. They could basically screw the pooch solidly for 2 years and still be able to come back and go, look, here's all our great stuff again. I think their problem is that they just don't have anything tangible that is within reach of the near future that people can get really excited about. And you've got that coupled with the fact that we've got two brand new consoles coming out that are, by all accounts, going to whoop its ass technologically. So,
yep. You know. All right. Well, we've got a lot in the near future for this episode of We Can Confirm. We've got a little sponsor break we're going to take here real quick. When we come back on the other side, we'll continue talking about upcoming E3 plans and maybe some Grand Theft Auto 5. Don't go anywhere. We Can Confirm. We'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service for 30 days. One audiobook to consider is Otherkin by Nina Barry. Otherkin, the first in a mesmerizing new series by Nina Barry that introduces a teenage feline shapeshifter coming to terms with her strange powers and deals with shadow magic. That's Otherkin, available on audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed for your free trial. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. All right, and we are back, and thanks to our sponsors there, audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed for your trial. We are back into the E3 preparatory discussion. Ozzy threw out a idea.
Ozymandias?
Yes.
That's right.
during the break, he said,
in between trying to take over the world.
Of course.
I'll let you take it away.
Well, I don't think Nintendo's going to stand pat throughout this throughout this whole year. I mean, sure, they're going to take a step back from E3, but they've got overwhelming competition coming later this year, and I don't think they're just going to just kind of lay back and not do anything. So I wanted to ask, do you guys think we're going to see a Wii U price cut at some point?
I think that would be something that would be a nice feature for a press conference at E3. And since there's no press conference at E3, I think it's a safe bet.
The key is at some point.
Yeah,
at some point, we will, because they'll all be on the market and the parity will not hold up.
I think they still feel like they've got a competitive package. I mean, look, when you're talking like they have been about not having the messaging right and not having the right places in place and knowing they need software, I don't think they're looking at it from a standpoint of we need to cut the price and move this damn box because it's not going anywhere. They're looking at it from the standpoint of we didn't do this right. And I still, for this point in time, am willing to give them a benefit of the doubt and say, you know what? You're right. You didn't do this right. That you haven't, like we talked about, you haven't put the right piece of software out there to give people that really strong... Wow, that's strong.
Exactly. And here we are at the biggest stage of the year, and you get your own, before the conference even starts, you get your own press conference every year where all eyes are on you and on the biggest stage or the biggest platform of the video game calendar.
Look, and not everyone can be Tupac.
Well, I'm just saying it's the time when you need to convince people to invest in your new, you know, your product that just came out that you need to have an install base for, that you're and these other companies are going to be doing the same thing. So
this goes back to third-party support, what we were talking about earlier, and not really going, hey, everybody that makes good games, come over here and make something cool for this device, and this is why it's going to be awesome. And yeah. You need to, if you're especially with new hardware like that, you have to bring people in, developers in, and really, you know, nurture them and help them make good stuff for your system.
They're going to go to E3. They're going to show Mario Kart. They're going to show Smash Brothers. They're going to show Zelda all on the floor, all in their booth. Their booth is going to be a sea of people. It's going to be jam-packed. And that is going to do all of the storytelling they need to do. But unfortunately, as we talked about, that's the only story. And the piece that doesn't fix is that doesn't tell the big why you, whoever you are that doesn't have one, should get a Wii U. It doesn't say you need to have a Wii U because Wii U is an amazing gaming experience because of the tablet that you have in your hand.
Right.
Right, which is an argument they need to make, I think.
It is totally the argument they need to make. And I think that's why, this is why you don't do a press conference. You don't do a press conference because you haven't got that question answered. But you know you've got in your back pocket these tools that have worked for you year in and year out, decade after decade. And so you still have those. You still do E3 with them. You're still really successful out on the show floor, and you avoid the press hit that you would take by having another big press conference at which you said very little and had not the substance to back it up.
Okay, I buy what you're selling.
I don't necessarily mind Nintendo Directs. I love Nintendo Directs personally, but
well, I think the Nintendo Directs are a different thing than a press conference, though.
Yeah, very different,
very much so. But I'm actually wondering how big is the audience for that? How many people actually? I mean, I know we watch it and we enjoy everything that they put out.
Well,
but
it doesn't really matter because the information proliferates. So
it's disseminated like instantly. And
I would say it's the secondary market that the Nintendo Direct is all about. It's all of the folks who are really hardcore, both who are in the blogs reporting on it, and
that's the word I meant, and the fan, not proliferate. I'm an
and
idiot.
The fan friend. It's all right. You've been around me. You've been around me for years now. It has to wear off somehow.
J-Matt's here
you just don't like to say words with seminate in them. I know.
I think they're going for the megaphone, right?
Right?
So not only do they have, you know, Shaq News and Kotaku and Joystick and Destructoid and everybody and their brother taking all the key pieces out of that and amplifying it, they also have the core Nintendo fans everyone who's a gamer and has their friend who's a Nintendo fan. We all know, or more than one. And they are now armed with all that info, and it's going to come up in conversations. And so it's getting out there in a good way. How many people actually watch the video feeds? I mean, we could look up the numbers. I bet it's at least tens of thousands.
Yeah, it doesn't
at least
really
tens
matter.
Of thousands. So they've got plenty of broadcast with that.
I will leave it on this. I sincerely hope for the best with Nintendo. I think when
so
we were
talking, say we all.
So exactly, we were talking about the three pillars: Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo. The gaming industry is a better place when Nintendo is doing well. And we saw the losses that they incurred over the past financial year, and I don't want to see them go suddenly start to slow down.
Look, the gaming space is a better place when any of its component pieces are doing well. Whether it be, you know, 2K or THQ you know, had THQ done well,
sure,
where would we be now, right? You know, I mean,
a wash in WWE games.
Darksiders 5 coming.
Speaking of which, you guys are poking fun, but I was actually thinking about Darksiders. I'm thinking, like, you know, the chances of Darksiders
games. You kidding me? Okay, Red Faction Guerrilla, baby. And love that
and
game.
Saints, the Saints Row stuff is great. I mean,
Saints Row is probably okay, but I'm really worried about, you know, like, obviously what game was it? Nordic, Games, and this isn't a publisher that's had the depth of production to pull off those sorts of games. Now they say they're looking for outside folks to work on it, and I hope it all works out great.
We're talking about Darksiders, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But in the context of. You said, hey, the business is better when Nintendo is better. The business is better when any of us are all doing well. You know, it's like important for everybody to do well. I'm really curious now to move on and talk a little bit about Microsoft, since we're 3 weeks away from the unveiling of the next Microsoft machine, and there's all kinds of blood in the water. All kinds of blood in the water. I loved Kotaku's rumor of a day ago that software development for the next Xbox is back behind over 6 months. Microsoft has canceled internal projects for not living up to development. I mean, Microsoft doesn't have enough studios to cancel projects, but needless to say, there was this argument running that software development and games development for the next Xbox is way behind. And then we had a very interesting, did you guys see the interview that Peter Molyneux did with Edge Online?
Yeah,
so a bit fascinating stuff. He says, he told them, that this is my personal feeling as a gamer. What I would do is double down on what the console is for its playing games. It's for playing consoles games to this massive, incredible, loyal audience of gamers out there. And he goes on to talk about how he doesn't need another box to do Facebook. He doesn't need to see Facebook in another place. And the big thing that he comes down to then is, and I want to see how you guys feel about this. He says that...
Peter Molyneux's got his finger on the pulse of Facebook, right?
There's always this talk. Man. He says there's always this talk about making consoles input one on the TV. It's the fight over moving it from being your Sky box, and Sky is the cable box equivalent in the UK, to your Xbox or PlayStation 4. And to me, as a gamer, I don't want that. I want my input two to be my games console. And I just think that all that stuff tends to confuse it.
Totally agree.
I
completely agree with that, and the reason is because, well, and I know I'm in the exception, but smart TVs, as they become more and more prevalent, you get Netflix and you get Hulu and you get all that shit that you don't need another app avenue to get all that social stuff. I don't go look at Facebook or Twitter on my Xbox.
It's not a zero sum game. It's not like we have to make a decision between it being a games thing, and it's like saying, well, I have a device that makes phone calls and I have a device that, you know, looks up mapping. I don't need to have them both on the same thing. Well, why? I mean, there's no reason not to. If you have this box plugged into your television and it can do everything, I don't see a downside.
See, I want that box, the people who are making that box, to focus on giving me the best damn games that I can get, really, really beefing up the technology. All this peripheral stuff about, you know, how I'm going to connect with my friends. I mean, developers can do that within game and you know, create their own little social network stuff to bridge that gap. I just don't think that – I want it to be about the games. I don't want to be, like, told how great the social features are or whatever. I mean, I have – I don't think it's quite the same thing as saying I have a phone, I have a camera. I don't need a camera with a phone – or a phone with a camera in it. I think it's more like, you know – all that stuff makes more sense. All that app stuff and the social stuff makes more sense native in my TV than it does in my gaming system or somewhere else. It's like loading all this other stuff on that. Yeah, you've got tie-ins to Twitter and you can tweet that you just passed level 6. But at the end of the day, like, that's not really – I don't care about any of that stuff as a gamer. Like, if I really feel proud about something, I'll go on Twitter and post something.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I don't necessarily need Twitter and Facebook integration in – anything, to be honest with you, other than, you know, my phone and my computer.
Right.
You know, if I want to visit those sites, I'll visit them. But I also don't see the downside of making these boxes multifunctional and putting the kitchen sink in them. Mm. I understand what you're saying about, like, we'll focus on the games, but I don't think other than having internal design studios making games and making hardware that is beefed up to the point where the technology engenders really cool games, I don't know what else they can do. Like,
do we want our consoles to be a PC though?
I mean, do we?
I think so.
Well, I mean, well, no. With all that other stuff, do you want to be composing Word documents on your Xbox, or you know, like all that function, that work based functionality, and the stuff that is maybe peripheral to gaming but not integral, or as integral.
Like, to some extent, aren't they already trying to compete with PCs? Didn't Sony describe the PS4 as "quote unquote" a supercharged PC?
Yeah, but if they were saying, "Look, this is like a supercharged PC," except we're not worrying about all the other bullshit that, you know, PCs have to take into account for, you know, computational stuff that's not related to gaming or right. You know, other subsystems or whatever. This is just all the tech that we put in here is so that when you put a game in, it'll play as good as it can with today's tech. And to your point, I understand that throwing extra features and stuff like getting a deal with Netflix to add a Netflix app to your box probably doesn't cost right. you much of anything. It's just – it just strikes me as being a lot of noise that I don't give a shit about because I have all that stuff elsewhere.
See, I think that's the key piece. It's a lot of noise
yeah.
that you don't give a shit about.
That's what
and
it
I
is.
Think this is the reason that I've seen gamers like rallying around, of all things, Peter Molyneux, which is kind of bizarre in and of itself. But rallying around these comments is because there has become a sense of, hey, we're gamers. Why the hell do you keep wasting our time with all this nonsense and emphasis on all these pieces that frankly are nice, but we don't give a shit about as the primary function? Like, that's great. It's fantastic that you can do all these things. I
no,
personally,
I agree with that. I think
that's what's happening here. I'm of a mind with Jeff that this thing, like, aren't we at a point in 2013, 2014, 2015 where we should be able to expect that the console we hook up to our television is perfectly fluent and capable of handling any of these little social app things that we do on our phones without even batting an eyelash? I mean, it should right. be something yeah. that this machine is so powerful that it's like, oh, you want me to bother with
it's
that?
It's not a bullet point that you put on your thing.
Right. And right. that's the thing is, like, stop making it the message when you're talking to gamers. And that's the thing is that a lot of times we've gotten to this point where everything, especially Microsoft, everything that Microsoft puts out there in the public consumption has been focused not on us. We feel like, hey, remember us? Remember the gamers? Remember the people who, like...
I think that's overstating it.
I think that's... Really? You think it's overstating it?
Yeah,
totally?
I mean, to say that everything they put out is not focused on you, I think that's not true.
More than half. They are, or at least, how about this? It's become a loud part of their discussion.
Yes, I will agree with that, where I will further agree with you is that what it seems like is that they've kind of run out of innovation, at least in the last generation of boxes and the last few E3s. It's like we're continuing to update Xbox Live. We'll change the UI, I guess, and we'll add, you know, you guys like Last.fm? We'll put that on. You know, it's like, right. what else can they, you know, what else right. can they do at this point? And they're still trying to give you more, 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 but at a certain point...
More and more services that are extra services yep. that my computer and my smart TV and whatever other, my
right,
Roku box all have.
Now yeah. don't get me wrong. I'm going to illustrate a slight flip side of this. I recently canceled my cable TV and, you know, movie channels and all that sort of stuff. And now I am existing on Netflix, the apps on I do on Xbox. I do use the NBC app, which is pretty good if you like any NBC news, because you can actually watch programming. It's not real time, but it's like they update it within a few hours, so you can watch the daily programming and stuff. And that's free, and that's great for me because I've made a decision to, you know, cut my bill
and
from $140 to $20 a month. You know,
people buy Roku boxes, people yeah. buy TiVo boxes. Yeah. If you have a console that can do all that stuff, it's not, I don't think, a downside.
But it's not the reason that I go to the store to buy a console.
No, I agree.
I'm
going
to flip it around the other
that.
Way. So, because I'm going to respond directly to Peter's things, I actually want my console to be input one because, number one, I'm a gamer first. And it is the thing I want to turn on first. Right. And I would like my television and other things just to somehow work magically when I don't want to play with my games. When I want to play, first thing I want to do, actually, when I go home, the first entertainment that I want is I want to turn on my game box, whether it's PlayStation or Wii U or Xbox. And then after that, after I'm like a little bit, like I have to take a downtime or I'm going to go, you know, cook or something, then I'm going to put on music or I'm going to put on, you know, The Daily Show or something. And it would be great if I could just slap a button and have that shit come on and not have to bounce around.
The real rant here, and this is one I have ranted about on Twitter more than once.
Now, can we get a frequency gauge to see if his voice actually jumps up an octave to know if the rate?
I don't understand why.
I don't understand.
The real thing to be crazy about here is, why is it still in 2013, where we have smart televisions, such a pain in the ass to change inputs?
because we all have like six remotes, because
right,
they're all
but
different.
Why can't I get a remote? Like, why is there a channel flip button on my remote and not an input flip
button on
my remote?
Okay, look.
I don't ever need to change the channel on my television.
There are some awesome universal remotes you can get. I mean, the downside is you're talking
about $300.
I'm talking about a television could have a button on it that says that says input. Take off the channel button. I don't need it. I'm only ever looking at, like, to change the fucking cable channel.
I'll take you one further. Just build it all into Kinect. Like, hey,
Now you're cluttering up your precious box.
My audio space. using too many words.
He's saying you are making the argument for the Xbox not being a multi-use machine, and then you just came back with saying, oh, well, put it on my Kinect.
But Kinect is a gameplay peripheral, mostly. Or that's at least how it was pitched, right? There are gameplay implications to Kinect. There's no, like, I'm not in the middle of a game and go, oh, let me boot up or let me use the Netflix button.
Right.
You know, like.
I'm just saying that I have experienced, I've had what, I don't know, four televisions in the last 6-7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them is it not a huge headache to change the inputs. Granted, first world problems. But,
why is it such a hard...
The last thing in the world I want to do is change inputs. Because it takes forever. I'm scrolling through it like make it easy. Just put it on the remote control. Like,
I think that's just part and parcel of having, you know, 4 or 5 HDMI inputs on your TV. And
right, which all of
USB us... USB cable and like...
Yeah.
Make it a smart glass feature or something.
Understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Well, so far the trade-off is... Well, of course, in my setup, I have an AV receiver, but the remote for my AV receiver has, like, you know, 9 buttons up at the top for all the inputs. So it's easy. You just press video 1, video 2, game machine, whatever, and it switches it out automatically. But there's, like, the remote is, you know, the size of a hockey stick.
Yeah. I'm just saying every television manufacturer, we almost, you know, I think all of us who are, you know, tech nerds.
First world problems.
Hate, you know, you the last thing you deal with is the television's remote, because that's the last thing you need, really. But it should be an easy way to change inputs. That's all I'm saying.
Jeff, you are going to love the Microsoft presentation in 3 weeks when they show you how you're going to sit on the couch and say, Kinect.
Xbox, I want to watch HDMI 4. And it'll be like, yes, Jeffrey, as long as you're always on.
You want to watch HD porn?
Sure. No, HDMI.
Yeah.
No. HD enema.
My mom's in the room.
High definition enemas coming right up.
I'm concerned as to what that press conference in 3 weeks is going to look like. Because I think they're going to spend like about maybe half hour, an hour talking about the hardware. But then they're going to go straight into services, what Xbox Live is going to do. And they're not really going to talk about any games in the way that Sony went.
There's this big conference coming up called E3.
Exactly. They already had their June 10th date set. So I think anyone going into May 21st looking for something similar to what Sony did is going to be disappointed.
Because of the fact that they need to fill...
Well, they're going to show some games, dude.
They have to show games.
I hope so.
They have to show games.
It'll be just like Sony, where they're going to give you some meat with your potatoes, and they're going to save some meat for the...
We know from Major Nelson that they're obviously going to show the plastic, because he's like, I can't believe you'd show console unveiling without showing the hardware. Okay, whatever. Like,
we're gonna hold you to that.
What do you guys think? More than one SKU? I'm betting on more than one SKU.
I'm betting yes too.
Well, you know, my take is more than one, but more than one not by virtue of internals, but by virtue of how you buy it.
You're saying it's the same box, but in two versions.
One subsidized, one unsubsidized.
I think there's going to be actually two different.
And how are you going to differentiate them?
With
hard drive space?
Price will be a big one.
I understand that. I meant what's going to be different about the internals.
I think there'll be the sort of starter box, and then there'll be like the gamer box. It'll be, you know, in a lot of ways, that was the
one will have racing flames on the side.
Notice he's still ducking the question. So is one of them going to not have a hard drive?
One of them comes without Netflix.
Neither of them will not have a hard drive.
So they'll both have hard drives.
Both have a hard drive.
It's just a hard drive size thing?
It might definitely be a hard drive size thing, and it might be more along the lines of what it can do and what it's geared toward, and one is more of like your set-top box and one is more of like your...
One's like the John Varvatos model. It has like leather trim and embossed edges.
Could they differentiate the Xbox Live model and basically go, look, pay an extra whatever $50 a year and you get X amount of cloud storage and you don't need to worry about your hard drive space, or you can get the model with the smaller drive if you want to... You know,
there has been
cloud storage doesn't really help you for having downloaded material, though.
No, it doesn't really.
It only helps for like save games.
Not at this point, Google Fiber, that's all.
Not at this point. There has been discussion that were there to be a subsidized model, that they would need a beefier pricing model to Live. In other words, that at $60 a year, that doesn't sufficiently provide enough revenue to support a subsidized console. And they would have to switch to some other sort of model that would be like, you know, a per month fee more in the range of like $10.
It's the microtransaction Xbox.
The dashboard's already crawling with ads. What more do they need?
Pay a dollar for your next level.
Well, I think there's plenty of room to discuss whether or not they should even have those ads in there. I mean, how much money are they actually making off advertising? Only they know the answer to that question. But I mean, if it's anything like, online space, you don't really make a lot of money off of that stuff.
It's anything like what we make on ads. Like, it ain't much.
For the amount of time, the amount of irritation and upsetness you're causing in the audience, are you really making enough money off of it to make it worthwhile?
Speaking of which, we'll be right back.
Yeah. I wish we had another sponsor. We could use it.
Has anybody ever heard any advertiser talking about success or not success advertising through the dashboard?
Like, no.
I think that's stuff, that lives on the homepage, it's a big deal when you get to be featured on the homepage.
It is, but just like, I mean, I know Microsoft's going to make it sound great, but like, I'd like to see somebody go, oh yeah, we ran a campaign on Xbox Live for
advertising success stories.
Yeah, like Pizza Hut or whatever, and Pizza Hut sales jumped like 30%.
Oh, I knew I forgot something. I forgot to get my pizza today.
Turning an eye towards. Is he serious?
Semi-serious.
Semi-serious.
Meaning you really planned to have a pizza today and you forgot to get it?
Well, I forgot to use the app because they were offering 15% off. So
15% off pizzas alive.
I don't make as much money as people think.
that's a almost tear-jerking commentary. So turning an eye towards games, I think Microsoft also in the Xbox ecosystem has another storm that's been brewing. The Halo community, we have talked about it before, their discontent with multiplayer in Halo 4. But I think that the situation actually, based off of the latest live games by unique users that Major Nelson posted, shows some other weaknesses in this system, weaknesses in the ability of where is it going next and what's happening. So the last week of top 10, or actually top 20 live games by unique users went this way. Black Ops 2 in the number one spot. Minecraft in the number two spot. And keep in mind, this is users, so this is people who are playing while they're online. FIFA 13, I mean, this game's dominant and going to remain dominant for a long time. Modern Warfare 3, you notice what I still haven't said yet.
Mm-hmm.
NBA 2K13, not surprising, and it's in number five. The NBA,
playoffs
are in great. I mean, they're pretty exciting playoff games this year, so a lot of people are playing NBA.
Go Warriors tonight.
So, and then finally, fallen out of the top five is Halo 4 in the sixth spot. It's one thing to be behind Black Ops 2. That's fine. You know, that's definitely a tough audience to go up against. But it's another thing to be behind Black Ops 2 and Modern Warfare 3 and have fallen out of the top five. Now, it's also conspicuous that we haven't even mentioned Gears of War Judgment yet. Mm-hmm. Gears of War Judgment was all the way down at 12. And it's underneath Modern Warfare 2, Grand Theft Auto 4, the original Black Ops, Battlefield 3. So I think it's really telling that, especially after just putting out their first map pack, and this being, it was a different team making Gears of War, but it was still a Gears of War game with a Gears of War oomph behind it from Microsoft, that it's not doing that well in multiplayer games.
I'm personally hoping that we are getting to a point where enough of the gaming audience has been playing games for long enough that there will be a bit of franchise fatigue that will cause some of these things to go away for a bit.
Well, is it franchise fatigue or is it something more? Is it shooter fatigue? Is it online all the same looking shooter fatigue?
Well, I don't think we can call it shooter fatigue because four out of these top 12 are Call of Duty titles.
Right. And what I'm saying is that I think that their cemented foundation of players are going to keep playing the games that they are loyal to. I mean, that's why Modern Warfare 2 is still sitting there at 11. That's why Modern Warfare 3 is sitting there at 4, because that community finds the game that it likes. The players, it's, we call it a community, but it's really a bunch of different communities, because they've, you know, Andrew actually wrote an interesting article this last week on Shaq News about this, about how, like, we're coming into Call of Duty 10, basically,
right,
and it's still on a roll. But what's interesting about it is that within those Call of Duty fans, they all have their favorites and their ones that they don't like. And it's also interesting to kind of get a gauge for how Activision had handled Elite, and the very quick move of Elite from this premium, you know, service that the feedback was, well, you know, it's only these top tier players that are getting into it and clans are into it, but it wasn't the everybody's game service that they had hoped it to be.
Right.
So they turned it into a free thing and changed the complexion of it entirely.
That speaks a lot to the great position that Activision is in, that they're able to take a risk like Elite and then try and sell those off, fail.
When
and
you're
go,
flush
well,
with cash, it's nice.
Yeah, exactly. So if it fails, you just adjust it to a free and it's a minimal loss.
So
I want to know, there are a million challenges to the throne of Call of Duty.
Yes.
Where are the million challenges to the throne of Minecraft? I want to know why that hasn't happened.
There are a bunch in the indie space, but there's
right. Terraria, nothing, yeah. And there's a bunch that are, but nothing that is like on Xbox Live Arcade or Xbox Live. You know, right. none that's made for the consoles. Like Minecraft is clearly doing well. I think that it reminds me of those 10 years or maybe less, but a large portion of time when the PC sales charts were just like Sims, Sims 2, Sims packs, Sims.
Yes.
And nobody was trying to make the next Sims game, the challenger to the Sims. It was just owning sales constantly, and nobody could figure out. And I really feel like Minecraft has tapped into the same pleasure center that the Sims did, which is like, you know, sandbox, playground, creativity, sort of joy and positive, like what I made. And I think there's far too few games that are trying to
cash
that check.
Without casting aspersions on Call of Duty, Call of Duty is sort of a rolled out piece of sugar cookie dough, and you come across with different cookie cutters, and you can create more Call of Duties, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty replicable sort of formula. You just need to have a shit ton of artists who can crank out a lot of high def resources, and somebody who can put together a Hollywood summer blockbuster sort of screenplay, like crazy over the top storyline to go with it, and then have a multiplayer team that has their act together, knows how to run the networking code, and can spin all those pieces together. And now that Activision has figured out that formula and has the teams in place to do it, it's pretty hard to assail that mount, because you have to assemble a team. You have to assemble this massive set of resources to go do that and do it competitively. Meanwhile, they can sit there and roll the dough out and stamp another one and stamp another one and stamp another one.
And that's the cookie dough analogy also speaks to how, even though it's one of those rare titles that sort of straddles the core and the new play or the casual online, like I'll jump on, play a couple hours of online shooter, because the game is set up that you can jump in there even if you suck and you can get a few kills.
Yeah.
You know, it's which people that have been playing it for a long time, and you see this in Halo 2, they want some people want it to get more core and to go, look, we don't want all these new, even though we were once in that same boat, like even though we were, you know, first discovering our first kill streaks not that long ago, we want something more.
Never forget your first kill streak.
More advanced. Well, I mean, and that's why, you know, I went through that phase with, you know, earlier first-person shooters, and then sort of Counter-Strike was my high watermark in terms of those tactical first-person, you know, played some Rainbow Six after that. But that was sort of like the pinnacle for me. And I think, you know, this for as different as it looks from iteration to iteration after 10 games, it's really not that different.
No. So where I was going with this and talking about this is, to me, I'm seeing a potential crack in Microsoft's – another potential crack in Microsoft's armor, and that is the strength of the Xbox 360 platform has been in Live, and that has been in large part carried by the Call of Duty games and their strong fan base. And it seems to have become a little bit one note, right? A little one note there on Live, a little bit, here's what we emphasize, here's what we focus on. if the PlayStation 4 is able to come into the next generation with a promise of a broader online gaming environment, a place that's more diverse than just the place that people go to play online shooters, that could give them another really cool element to appeal to the audience again, to bring back some of that excitement about going online and playing games.
That would be something – that would be completely new IP, right? Because I don't think they could do anything like that with what they have available.
Not only new IP, but new ways of playing games. And I think this is one of the things that and look, PlayStation's been banking a lot of goodwill with the indie community. You know, the PlayStation Network is perceived by far, I think, as the more friendly place to go and make your indie games and to take your indie games. And that's not saying that Microsoft hasn't had indie games. They have,
and obviously, but in some circles, it's perceived as openly hostile.
Exactly. And maybe to their detriment, Microsoft was so concerned about having this steady flow of content into Live that they have just churned and churned and churned and churned on digital content. Whereas, you know, many of these games that come into PlayStation Network, they actually get their couple of 3 weeks in the sun. They get their spot where it's like, hey, this is the cool game to have on the PlayStation Network right now.
Yeah, people are still talking about Guacamelee, and it's been, what, three, 4 weeks?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And when was the last time you saw that happen with an Xbox Live Arcade game? When was the last time it was more than just the flavor of the week?
Well, I would have thought it'd be Monaco if that can ever get out of the gate.
Yeah, so I heard they dropped, by the way, they dropped a new build to certification. So hopefully it'll pass.
Yeah, I hope so.
We should talk about that a little bit.
God, that game's good.
It really is. Really smart on a number of levels, that game.
Well, people have been saying that for the past 2 years. Everybody who goes to PAX has walked away from having played Monaco going like, holy shit.
Well, you were right. We talked about it a little last week, and I had only played single player, and you were like, wait till you play co-op. And you were so right.
You said people were going to come out with stories, and you're absolutely right about that.
It's awesome. So it's the game, man. It is the jam, definitely. If you like to get in there, have like that multiplayer experience that goes beyond just me playing a character in the game and doing something.
And the specific role assignment plays so much into that. It's so good to feel like, okay, I'm the special dude that does this thing, and it's just awesome.
The way that they've managed to put everything into that context that you could possibly imagine being part of an actual heist situation.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing missing. There are so many tiny details that they've managed to translate into that full top-down, simplified graphics, but everything works just like you would think it should work in the real world, and you truly do feel like when you manage to get in there, execute a plan, get all the coins you need, unlock all the safes you need, hack all the computers you need, and get out of there, you feel like I'm fucking Ocean's 11 right now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It translates the theme of the game so effectively, and I think that's really where those stories come from, because you feel like, yeah, we got in there, the guards heard us, we started running. It's very much a simple video game a la Pac-Man, but the theme is conveyed so well that you never think of it that way. You think of it like I'm raiding this building.
It tickles the same pleasure center that Gauntlet did way back in the day, even though Gauntlet is way less involved and intricate and complicated. It's that camaraderie of being with a bunch of friends, and you've all got your role, and it's like,
I hadn't thought of that, but you're bang on.
I had a couple of friends that I compared it to Gauntlet.
Yeah, that's the juice right there.
You're bang on.
But like the layouts of each building that you're raiding, the way, architecturally it all sort of makes sense. Like a bathroom is where a bathroom kind of would be, and when you get outside somewhere, it works how an outside would sort of be, and if you're on the second floor, it works how the second floor would really be, and it so effectively communicates that idea of executing a plan. You know, like you see in a movie where they roll out the blueprints and like, you're going to go from here to here to here. That's what you're doing in this game.
And without trying to sound too grandiose, that's why for me, Monaco is one of those games that really embodies the awesome kick in the ass that indie games provide. Because it's not doing it. Look, there's no room to hide behind amazing graphics and fantastic character models. It's not even about that. It doesn't even need those. It's about fantastic design. It's this great game design that gets you into it and playing and having a great time, and the way it's presented to you works because it all embodies the whole thing. Like, the whole experience works together really great, and they're not they're just pushing the boundary of, hey, player, here's something that's really fun to do. We're going to make sure it works on all those levels. We're going to make sure, Jeff, that when you come away from this game, you're going to feel like you were Ocean's 11.
Right.
And that was what was important. And you're not going to feel like you were Ocean's 11 because we had, you know, George Clooney's likeness in the game. You're going to feel like it because you
did. Although I would pay extra for that. The man is dreaming.
That's right.
You're going to feel like it because you actually get this sensation, that same aha and yeah feeling of, I did that. I accomplished that. And that's genius. And that's the kick in the ass that indie games give us, because they come in with these smaller teams, but the emphasis is so great on the design and so much on making that connection with the player. And they don't always have that, you know, resource of 50 artists cranking out all of these texture maps and all that kind of stuff to make the game look beautiful, but they've got it up here in their head. They've got this great creative idea, and when they can get that lightning bolt to strike, that's the kind of kick that, like, we still need in the industry. That's why I love the indie game movement stuff.
The co-op, I hope we're entering a new golden age for co-op, because I cannot think of the last most recent example of when I had so much fun doing a co-op little mission thing. I mean, it feels different, and it's not samey, and it's not like, I mean, granted, stuff like Saints Row the Third and co-op and those kind of games is fun, but it's still, you know, it's a shooter and you're very familiar with this assigns a level of importance to your actions as an individual, but requires you to work as a team, and it's just really special.
It's really special because it fosters something that I've harped on. Hold your thought.
I'm holding it.
Okay. It fosters something that I've harped on about a million times about co-op. I love co-op. I want to play co-op games all the time. I find the struggle I have with co-op games is that almost all of them really are geared towards me playing with the same person for an extended period of time, and almost presumes that I'm going to find a friend that's like, Jeff and I are going to make a pact that we're going to play Borderlands, and we're going to play Borderlands for the next 6 weeks. So it's great for me and Ariel because we live together and we can do that. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I can't do that with a lot of games, and there's so many co-op experiences that go unrealized because the expectations just don't fit the way we live, right? But this game, in the meantime, it's like you can hop in and you don't have to know anybody you're playing with, and it's so intuitive to, like, I'm playing this role, you're playing that role, we're going to do our thing, and you're all relying on each other. You go and you do and you're out. It's the only other game that, like, obviously from a tactical nature, like Rainbow Six Terrorist Hunts used to sort of have that same ability to drop in and play. But this is an area of innovation and design that I hope, and it's something I think about all the time, is like, how can we get players to feel comfortable hopping into co-op games, playing cooperatively, and through the design, nurture that, so we don't have to worry about people coming in and being trolls and screwing up the game. And we're not expecting people to have to play with the same person over and over and over for the next 60 hours. Because I still want those experiences, but I want to also get to a point where I could have a giant world that's not an MMO, but that I play cooperatively with other people, but I don't have to have a planned place that I only play with Jeff Mattis, but I can come in and play with whoever I can play with that week or that day or that hour.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of the secret sauce of Monaco also is really latching onto the I would never describe that game as a stealth game, but it is a stealth game. And it latches onto what's fun about stealth, which is sort of executing a plan unbeknownst to the NPCs in the game, but it really handles fail states in a really smart way. It handles, like, when the S hits the F, you can recover from that, you know.
Did we go kids rating all of a sudden?
When the shit hits the fan. Wait. When the S hits the F?
It's the sassafras hits the fancy pants.
Oh.
It's TRS episode totally five, different. Maybe? Anyway.
I guess I wasn't watching early enough. I'm sorry,
old
Jeff.
School. It's just, you know, I just throw in my own inside jokes for myself.
And for the fans.
But it handles that chaos. And I keep coming back to Pac-Man because it feels to me a lot like in Pac-Man, you can be completely behind the eight. I mean, I'm referencing.
There's
fucking
so many
Pac-Man
choices
right
you
now.
Can make in that game.
But I'm like, saying you get
left,
behind the eight ball,
right,
up down.
You get behind the eight ball, and then all of a sudden, you know, you manage to get to that power pellet, and the table is
and then
turned.
The cherries and the bananas.
All right, I'll stop referencing Pac-Man.
Pineapples.
But it feels similar in that you have these wildly vacillating turns of fate, really, and it's like Because oh, about, shit, we're screwed. Run, jump in the thing. And then all of a sudden, all right, we're back. You know, we're back in the power position. Knock that dude out as the cleaner.
Yeah, somebody go revive Garnet real quick.
Yeah.
So I almost think it's not so much a stealth game as it is an evasion game.
It really is, because you always get caught. You're going to get caught.
Exactly. You always get caught, and then it's on.
Yeah.
Then it's fucking on like Donkey Kong, and that's the part where
Pac-Man.
And you're into it, right? Whereas I think of a stealth game as like, I'm constantly sneaking, and then when I get detected, well, I'm kind of screwed.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know? The whole point of traditional stealth games in a large sense is like, avoid detection.
Yeah, just avoiding.
Detection equals failure. And this game is more like, you know, you're going to be dealing with a variety of conditions, and one of those conditions is going to be at all points bulletin out for your ass, you know.
And I also want to say that despite its minimalistic visual style, the art direction in this game is so phenomenal.
Beautiful.
Because you look at everything and you know there isn't a whole lot of like, what the fuck is that? It's like, I know this is a Switch. This is a hackable terminal. This is a laser grid. This is like, it's visually like
strikes
immediately. It's minimalist, but it's like, boom.
And I know this might not be a very popular perspective, but I do feel like, unfortunately, there are some in the sort of indie space that their graphical style is selected just to sort of be punk rock and contrarian and anti-establishment and just like, we're, you know, a throwback just to be a throwback. And this game does not feel like that at all.
See, there's some of that, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're two dudes in a fucking garage and we're making a game.
Well, true.
And like,
but do you think there's some of like a design aesthetic where it's like, I'm gonna show you we can.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. So, did you play Cart Life?
I did not play.
Okay,
Cart Life.
Have you seen screens from it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, the monochromatic. There's another indie game that I just played. There's a beta on Steam Greenlight. It's called Papers, Please.
And it's been greenlit, by the way.
Oh, it has. Okay,
it made it yesterday.
Awesome. Yeah, totally good. It's the beta is like free. It's like a work in progress deal. But basically, you play the guy that's in charge of a checkpoint at a border crossing, right? So, got people come up, and you call people up, and they'll dump their papers, and you have a list of rules. Like if they're citizens of this country, they need this documentation, and you have to make sure that the birth dates match, and like
that's a ballsy design.
The photos match to the face.
You're
and
literally
stuff.
A public servant.
You are. But it's, here's the weird thing. It's very oppressive. The art style is very like gray. All the people. It's very, you know, it looks like almost like a Commodore 64 type, you know, graphical style, so it's really, really basic, but it's very effective, it's very oppressive, and it, despite that, it makes you feel empowered because you're the one that's determining who gets through the border crossing and who doesn't. then the day ends, right? So it goes through a series of days, and every time the day ends, it shows you your family members' names and how cold they are, how hungry they are,
God.
And the money that you earn while you're at the ticket booth are basically you're using to pay for heat and food and medicine if somebody gets sick or whatever, and there's no interaction there from what I can tell at this point, but it's like, oh shit, grandpa's sick, he needs medicine, and like you're at the border crossing and you can take your time and like look at stuff and look at every little detail and go, oh, I didn't miss a single one, but then you're like, oh shit, I only got five people through and I didn't make enough money to heat the apartment. So there's this balance of like,
wow.
I got to get through this shit as fast as possible. It even gives you three warnings, so if you miss like his birth date on his passport doesn't match his birth date on his work visa, then you can basically, you know, you basically tell them to go away and you reject them and stuff. But if you miss that, it goes through and it gives you a warning and you get three warnings per day and then they start deducting money from when you screw up. So it's like
the video game we have made is to convey the sadness of the Cold War. And
So besides the ticket window that you see where you see an actual person walk up and it's their face and then you were actually dragging the documents over to an area where you can inspect them. Above that, you see the entire line of people that are leading up to the border crossing thing. And so whenever you let somebody through, you see their little dark figure like cross to the – and then occasionally you'll see a terrorist will end the day. Like he'll jump the border fence and throw a grenade and blow up the police and it's like day three ended.
Oh my God.
And you're just like, whoa, dude. It's
oopsie. Hold on, I got to get back to the granddad.
If any of this sounds remotely interesting, I highly recommend checking it out.
I think it's fascinating, and I love these things are being made. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's seeing what interactive storytelling and interactive experiences, how they can sort of shed light on real human behavior and real human experience. You have to, maybe after the break, you can tell the story that we were talking about in the lobby.
We'll
get that prepped. And to answer your question about the art, I'll just throw this out there. Think back to all of the great, just alone, the great 2D, 8-bit and 16-bit era role-playing games that you played. Mm-hmm. Think about all of the characters that you would immediately be able to identify with, had a great, great imagination in your head of what they looked like from the art.
Shamino and Dupree.
There's an argument to be made that the imposed limitations of that medium palette, of the palette of that medium,
mm-hmm.
forced artists to push the art, to put the creative side more face forward and not rely on the tools. Whereas now, with this, within the era that we're in, you can do unbelievable, we talk about Uncanny Valley, unbelievable, fantastic, arted up presentations. How do we now push, how do we get back to the next step of like really exploiting those tools? Like, just think about even something as simple as Mega Man. Think of how awesome a character design Mega Man is. How do you get the modern equivalent of that refined and awesome of a piece of art inside a palette that has millions of colors? Wow. And
it's all about constraint, right? Yeah. Like how much financial constraint do you have? That's why you see it in the indie space so much, is because there is no more money to get.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how do we make this work and how do we make this effective? Not, oh, can we get another, 100 Gs so we can, make this look better or whatever,
Gonna get 100 Gs, but J-Matt.
That's, yeah, please.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, we will make sure that Jeff coordinate whatever that story is. We'll come back with the second half of Weekend Confirmed when we continue.
Want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. And Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like BioShock Infinite, Injustice Gods Among Us, Tomb Raider, and Dead Island Riptide. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want. There are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, you send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. And now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play. It's free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like a game you're playing, all you do is click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, now we've had a little break. Hopefully the two Jeffs have prepared the promised story.
They have a story to tell.
Well, it's Mattis's story, and I just got the luxury of hearing it early.
Yeah, so
it's pretty rad.
So I started playing Game Dev Tycoon, which is another indie. It's also in the Steam Greenlight program, and it is the reason that I actually picked it up. It's like $8 or whatever. But the reason that I bought it was because of what the developers did when they released the game to combat piracy. Freaking genius! So it's like Game Dev Story. So you're running your own game company. When they released the game, they uploaded a alternate version to Pirate Bay, which basically had a deal where you would play the game and you're going along and it's the whole game. And then all of a sudden, boom, pirates have hacked your company and all your money's gone. And you're like, so you see people that have pirated the game on the forums going, dude, how do you get rid of pirates, man? They're like, I can't get any further in the game. This sucks. What the fuck?
It sucks. They're stealing all my money, man. All my profits. I've been working so hard on my company, and they stole all my profits. And it's like, welcome to the mirror.
Yeah.
It's so great.
It's the most awesome sort of meta pirate copy protection that I've ever heard of in my life. So that was what prompted me to get it, other than
they sort of paint sprayed the loot.
Yeah.
Now they know exactly where all we're.
Well, it's more than that. It's more than that. It's what I think, and the reason I thought of the story when we were just talking about stuff like this is, It's what's magical about interactive entertainment. You are inside these systems that really teach you how things work and how they relate to each other. And because you are interacting inside those systems, maybe one or two of these people will go, ding. Oh, yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
Because I've had to experience that. I now have had that experience. It's like how anybody that's ever waited tables usually isn't a dick to people who wait on them. It's because they've been inside it. They've been inside the experience. And you get, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a fucking shitty job.
I still pick up the trash whenever I leave the movie theater because I used to work in movie theaters.
Right.
I still do that.
So I have to ask the question.
Yes.
Because, look, we all of us who are at least probably this level of geek gamer, we're into Kairosoft games,
yes,
starting with Game Dev Story.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of sound like a shameless ripoff a little bit.
It is far deeper. It is very, very similar. But from what I've been able to tell, now there's a free demo that you can download, which is like the first 5 years of gameplay, which is, you know, allows you to develop a few games from your garage. But what's happened since I've gotten to, my first studio, right? I've had my first big hit of a game developed by my one single character. I've hired a new employee. And now I'm doing stuff like researching game engines, and you can decide what components your game engine will have, and that will, you know, determine how long it takes you to research it. You can research new topics. There's a lot of crossover, but then it goes a level deeper and goes, okay, how are you going to market? You're going to research marketing. You're going to research target markets. And you can go down that path, or you can basically, here's another example of how it's more complicated. When you develop a game, which is the bulk of what you're doing at first,
yeah,
select a genre, select a type of game that it is, and select a platform, and then you start developing it, and periodically through the development process, it'll give you a little window, and it says the window has 3 sliders on it and 1 meter at the bottom. So by adjusting the sliders, which are like, say, graphics, dialogue, and sound, for example, you can adjust those and decide what percentage of effort you're going to put into each of those for each section of the game. And then those feed into technological points and development points. And those are sort of, I think, in the back end, cross-referenced with the genre that you picked and the platform that you picked and all this other data that has gone into making the game. And that'll determine how successful it is, how much the critics like it, how much the fans like it. And it does really – it gives you that same game dev story, like, oh, cool, I get to name all my games and decide what I'm making and stuff. But it adds an extra level of, wow, this is actually – gets pretty deep. Like, there's a lot of extra stuff, peripheral stuff that – just wouldn't make sense in a mobile title.
So it is more of the same, but it's more of the same exploded for the PC space.
Yeah, that's my impression so far. Now, like I said, I'm sure, like most tycoon games,
it so are you gets liking it
more? Yeah, I am actually. I was.
That's really the most important thing.
I expected to like it because I like game dev story, but I'm surprised at how much I actually like this, given that it has a lot of similarities.
I found that of all the Kairosoft games, Grand Prix Story was the one I most liked. But I think that's because, A, I love racing, and B, watching the little races was fun.
Dude, that one and Pocket League Story, the soccer.
Makes sense, because you probably got to watch soccer matches, right?
Well, you train your players, and you're doing all sorts, and you actually watch the matches and have little interactive things you can do to switch their formations on the fly, and it's pretty cool. Game Dev Tycoon, very good.
Speaking of more of the same.
Yes.
I played the Marvel Heroes beta this week.
Why? Wait. How is that?
More of the same. You know, it's like Diablo. I don't know. It was an attempt.
Well, it is Dave Brevik, so that's not surprising. But Dave promised like he was going to hit all of the notes that Diablo 3 should have hit.
Which is what exactly?
That's dependent on which Diablo fan you ask in large part. I think the things that I would really wonder how they even work into this, like how do they work itemization into a superhero game?
Well, first of all, I'm an enormous top-down, loot-driven action RPG fan. A huge Diablo fan, Torchlight. I love those kinds of games.
I do too.
And I am a huge Marvel Superheroes fan. So this seemed like a match made in Jeff's heaven.
Yeah.
And so, it's, you know, couldn't be more excited about it. Now, I sat down with the beta over the beta weekend and loaded up my first character. I got the ever-loving blue-eyed thing in there.
So this is a case where you play...
You pick a character.
This is not one of those... It's not City of Heroes. You are actually playing the comic book heroes you love and cherish.
Indeed. In fact, I think, you know, it's free to play, and it's going to be all microtransaction-based, and it's a lot of that is, hey, new Marvel heroes, you want to play as those guys? Human money. Yeah.
Wait, so you're going to see like an army of Hulks like running down the street? Or
well, there is that. to be honest with you.
Oh.
I think it would be interesting if they sharded the world even more, and like if you pick the Hulk, then you're in your own shard with no one else who has ever picked the Hulk. I think that'd be kind of cool, but they don't do that.
Okay.
Anyway, so
can you at least have like Green Hulk and Purple Hulk and Red Hulk?
Well, there are numerous costume changes, numerous, and all of them are like microtransaction for a different costume.
Speedo Hulk and Banana Hammock Hulk, and
which means since it's all cosmetic. Of those kinds of things, and they're selling those as microtransactions, that means that one of the biggest things I like about these kinds of games, these Diablo loot games, is the loot, is how great the loot is and how awesome it looks on my dude. And oh my gosh, I got a new hat. And my hat is so much awesomer than the last hat I had. And I am so excited to because not only because the stats help me out, but because it looks super rad. And oh my God, I got the chainmail one. And oh, this looks so cool. So when I first started playing The Thing, which was the first character I played, I was like, oh, I broke some things and kicked some people in the face and did a lot of – smashed the ground a bunch and was running through. And I was like, oh, man, they literally left out the thing I liked most about these games. I kind of don't like this. And then I kept playing and I kept playing and I switched over to Cap. You know, I'm a big Captain America fan. So switched over to Cap. And I started smacking a lot of bad guys in the face, running around. I was like, well, you know, the game really de-emphasizes like looking for stuff, which is one of the things I like about these games. Whenever I break open a box, I used to be excited if something fun might fall out. Don't have that. But I played more as Cap, and then I leveled up. And I leveled up a couple more times, and I got new Cap abilities. And I was like, oh, now my shield can bounce between multiple enemies. Awesome. Love that. And oh crap, now I get to fight Venom, and I get to fight Electro, and I realized that they've swapped out the carrot. The carrot on the end of the stick is different in this. It's not what usually is the case for these type of games. The carrot is the Marvel part is get farther.
The superhero.
Yeah, get farther, see more superheroes, do more with the superheroes, see a different guy's lair.
It's the next issue of the comic book.
It's the next issue of the comic book. And so basically what happens is you'll be in the Avengers Mansion, or at least this is what the beta consisted of. You'll be in Avengers Mansion, and in Avengers Mansion you get new missions from different members of the Avengers. You can craft certain items by picking up Pym particles. Hank Pym is the Ant-Man and Giant Man, and he's sort of the fiction basis for making stuff in the game. You can do numerous things in Avengers Mansion, which is sort of your home base camp, and then you deploy out into these sort of hub worlds where it seems to me that everybody can go to the same hub world, and you're in multiplayer with a bunch of people, so you can have, 12 Scarlet Witches running around and 4 Spider-Mans and, 6 Wolverines. And it's a little chaotic and a little jarring it's okay. But then in the middle of those hub worlds is where you go for your missions, and those missions look to be more instanced. So I go in with people that I'm actually teamed up with,
right.
And now we're our team. And I think we could – I didn't test this out, but I suspect that you could still both be Wolverine should you choose. But it's a smaller – you're not going to have the riffraff running around. You're not going to be bombarded with a bunch of people.
Now, given that you're playing the same character, do you have any choices when you start out, say you're creating Wolverine from somebody else that's creating Wolverine for the first time? Like what?
Zero. You have the costumes that you have unlocked. So you can choose to purchase unlocks for the Weapon X Wolverine or Classic Wolverine.
Looking at another player and you're like, oh, I know what you've unlocked. Like you've unlocked the thing or whatever.
But when,
like
when you get stuff, what happens is loot that drops will be like you'll get a belt or you'll get a shirt. And it's very – in the same way that it's specific in Diablo that there's like a witch doctor drop or a barbarian drop that – the barbarian can't use the witch doctor's totem. There'll be like a Captain America shield drops, and only Captain America people can play that.
So how limited are they on the characters? I mean, you think about Diablo 3, you've got 3 archetypes.
The big thing is that you can – of the roster that you own, you can swap them at any time.
I was going to say is how big is the roster? Because you think of like a dungeon crawl game like this, there's typically like 3 to 5 characters, and that's it.
That's not the case here. And it does seem to be that they are less differentiated as far as – it doesn't really – there's sort of more ranged characters and more brawler characters, but it doesn't seem to have a clear delineation of mm-hmm. like, you know, these are more magic user types. These are more tank types. It's more like a mix and match of skill – like Captain America is a guy who runs up and punches people, but he also has a ranged attack because of his shield. And the Thing, who doesn't have a shield, he Gambit? Has a ranged attack because he hits the ground and it shoots a shockwave. So
can I play Gambit?
I don't believe Gambit's in the game yet, but you can bet on the fact that you'll be able to play every goddamn Marvel character
for $2.99.
I would pay $2.99 to play Gambit.
Yeah, I might.
I mean, the roster already in the beta was fairly large, and I mean, Spider-Man was there, Deadpool. I know you're a big Deadpool fan. Deadpool, Punisher, Scarlet Witch.
Punisher.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There was a lot of characters, and I'm sure there will only be more and more if the game does well. But yeah, you can switch on the fly, even during a mission. You can switch which character you have. Now each character levels up independently. So I just earned enough money or credits or whatever it is to unlock a cool new thing in another character. If I hop over to that character and I'm in a level that's higher than them, I'm going to get my ass kicked. So you should go back and you have to level up each character independently.
It's also kind of an evil way to get you to buy more characters because you can get drops for characters you don't have and then be like, oh, right. Man, I got this really cool.
Now, the bummer is that when I do get a drop that's like a sweet Captain America shield, it is exclusively a stat increase. Now, the stats are cool because some of the stats are literally like you can do this upgrade in your talent tree much earlier than you're supposed to, which is a cool kind of stat bump where you're going to get a new talent, you're going to get a new ability much earlier than just earning it,
mm-hmm.
which is I think is cool. But other than that, there's really no excitement about the loot. Now, the boss battles where you get to fight like a named Marvel supervillain, they're pretty fun. I found that I was able to just spam my most powerful attack and then recharge my spirit, which is basically your mana, and then just run back over and spam that and beat everybody so far that I had played. So there may be some balancing they need to do with that. But their big drop, their sort of purple drops, are these medals. And the medals are bind on equip, and they give you like the biggest stat bumps. So you can imagine your guys running around with a medal that says I beat Green Goblin and it does a certain thing. And that's kind of cool because if you inspect somebody else's character, you're literally seeing which bad guy they beat to wear that medallion. But you can only wear one at a time. Mm-hmm. And I wish that they would have had a little flexibility to – because the number of item slots are not crazy. It's not like you have, you know, shoulders and hats and things for everybody. If because there's just like a belt, like why not just let me throw a weird belt onto Captain America or onto Scarlet Witch? You know, I think that would be kind of cool.
There are comic book artists that are like, no,
probably. But you know,
that's the downside of using licensed characters instead of going create your own, you know, right. Super douche. You
and
know.
And I like the fact that
or whatever, like whatever your character happens to be.
Super douche. I mean, you're washing all out.
I really came to a complete my pendulum swung the complete opposite direction on this game because at first I was like, oh, they really didn't get what's so fun about these types of games, and by the end I was like, I love playing as Captain America. I love the fact that I'm throwing my shield at Captain America and doing my stuff.
You just answered a question for me because one of the things that I looked at this game and was worried – not worried, but had the thought cross my mind was playing as a superhero. Like superheroes are typically, you know, action, physical-oriented sort of characters, right? And you think of – I mean, look, everything doesn't have to be in Justice Gods Amongst Us where it's a fighting game. But you think of like, you know, the Spider-Man game and the Batman game where you have a lot of control over your character and their actions and you feel very one-to-one. And I was like, how's that going to translate to left mouse button and right mouse button? Because in a Diablo world, it's like you're just picking things and clicking on them. Right. I'm like, how much am I really going to feel like, you know, Spider-Man or Wolverine when I'm just like – left mouse, left mouse, left mouse, right mouse, left mouse.
Well, you know, they run up and they smack in various animations. You know, they have their own animation cycle to do combos and stuff that you're just basically holding on the left mouse button. But then you have your hotkeys to do, you know, Spider-Man shoots webs or, you know.
Well, so let me ask you this. Like, given that the hook is being these cool superheroes, I mean, it just strikes me as something that might be better served, at least that aspect of it would be better served in a single-player game, because then you can go, you are this superhero. Here's all these cool things, and it's not mitigated by we have to have a somewhat generic quest system and, you know, a big MMO. You know, I mean, MMOs have their things that they're trying to improve on and get around, but like it doesn't – it seems like that you would be like, oh, cool, superhero, and then that would sort of be diminished
by the fact. Like we haven't seen attempts to do that.
Well, that's totally true.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but
or Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
I was about to ask you if it's how similar it is to Marvel Ultimate Alliance, because that's what it sounds like. It sounds like an online version of that game.
It feels very different. I played a lot of Marvel Ultimate Alliance series over the years, and it feels very different because those games felt more like the extension of like a Double Dragon or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles-esque brawler,
right.
And this definitely does feel like Diablo Torchlight. What I think is worrisome about the staying power. I mean, what's fun about having those games be multiplayer is like showing off your cool stuff, you know, showing off your sort of ultimate badassery, you know, and you're not going to get that here. You're going to get more like
powers,
or I unlocked a really expensive hero, right. or what it is. And I worry that down the line, when I've exhausted the number of powers that Captain America can do, it's not fun because I'm not excited about unlocking a new cap power.
Do you get the sense it's like a League of Legends model where as they roll out new characters, some characters will be playable to everybody for a short period of time and then it rotates to a new – you know, because
– maybe. I doubt it. I imagine it's more like, hey, we're
– $5 a pop, guys.
Yeah,
here we go.
We finally put Gambit out. All the Gambit fans hop on.
Right.
So, you know, by the way, we've talked about this game before, but have you played Path of Exile?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine how Path of Exile didn't capture you.
So no, it's awesome.
You know, they continue to add more and more content to that. If you haven't played Path of Exile, it's a great, great Diablo.
Is it out or is it still in beta?
It's still in beta.
It's still technically in beta, but they're into chapter 3. They keep adding content to it all the time.
My favorite thing about that game is the economy is so innovative and interesting because there's no money in it.
Yep.
It's all based on transforming items. And
definitely can easily recommend Path of Exile. All right, so on the other side of the superhero equation, Ozzy played Injustice: Gods Among Us. And I kind of want to get your take on that game because I loved Mortal Kombat, but I kept looking at this game thinking to myself, you know, I think if I was going to play another, if I was going to sit down and play a game of this ilk, I'd just play more Mortal Kombat because I really loved the Mortal Kombat characters and I like the way they fight. And the addition of like interactive backgrounds was cool, but and keep in mind,
they ain't Superman.
I know, and I think part of the problem is that I'm not the jumbo comics fan, so that kind of puts me
at
a disadvantage.
A petite comics
fan. I'm a petite comics fan. That's right. I'm a petite comics fan, so I like them, but then like the fighting game piece, it's like I just assume play with a Mortal Kombat character because I really like how over the top and crazy they are.
Well, this game was not made for you.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of comic fan service in it, but there's a lot of it that can capture the casual fan imagination, kind of like... It's built on using those environments in the background and basically bashing people through walls and all that type of thing. If you're expecting it to be Mortal Kombat, they tweaked it. If you go into it trying to play Mortal Kombat, like trying to use the traditional block button, that type of thing, not there. They actually structured it closer to Street Fighter in that you hold back to block and they took the run button away. And the combos are something closer to like Marvel versus Capcom where you can keep infinites going, you can juggle your opponents and that type of thing. But the casual fan actually does stand a chance. In fact, there are a couple of stages where you can easily cheese a lot of the environment stuff. Like Metropolis has like a flying sentry robot, so you can just keep tossing the robot at people. So, but it's really built for a lot of comic book fans, and I don't know how much staying power it's going to have with people that aren't into that universe so much.
Or, I mean, I don't think it was intended ever to be like a tournament game.
Actually, it is a tournament game. They're actually starting to play it at fighting game tournaments over the past couple weekends. Yes, they are.
So how do you think it's going to mesh with the competitive market?
I don't know how to answer that. It's been a couple of weeks, but I think they may have to do something with the environments just because they can be spammed, it can be cheesed. So, but they've actually had input from various professional tournament fighters. They're actually trying to tap into that market. They have the game set to go to Evo, but it's too early to say how long.
Jury is still out for Ozzy. Clearly, yeah. He doesn't want to say anything bad, which I can get. That's cool. Jury's still out for you. Did you play through the single player campaign?
I absolutely love the story mode. The story mode is actually, and I think I might have said this in my review, it's on par with the direct-to-DVD animated movies, in that it's not.
Those are excellent.
They are. They're really good. And this
really?
And this story,
they're fantastic.
Yes,
DC Direct knocks those out of the park.
All right.
They're great.
Cool.
Yeah, and this story is on par with that. And I guess if I want to describe the story, it starts out with, you know, you watch Metropolis go up in a nuke. The Joker blew up Metropolis with, and I don't want to spoil exactly how he does it, because the way he does it is so twisted that
of course it's the Joker. Surprise.
But even I was surprised at how, and it's totally comic booky. It's not anywhere in realism, but it's so comic booky and at the same time so twisted. But anyway, after Metropolis blows up, Superman becomes evil. He becomes a dictator. He rules the world with an iron fist, and then you find out, and it's an alternate universe. It turns into a bit of an Elseworlds tale.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you go.
That is kind of cool, actually. Yeah,
you go into our universe, and the same events are about to unfold, except, you know, some dimensional rift. Because
that's a clever way to explain why you have these heroes beating the crap out of
each other. And then Mitzelblixen shows up, and everything goes haywire.
Yeah, you have a couple of our heroes get sucked into that universe.
No, he's not in the game.
Undownloadable character. I would totally play Mitzelblick.
Yeah, it would be pretty fucking awesome.
I'd be like, you can't beat me until you say my name backwards.
This is a terrible fighting game.
He could still be a DLC character for all
it's
we
more
know.
More of a spelling game.
He's a Kinect-only character.
You see some of our characters go into that other universe, and the idea is that Superman is the main villain, which might rub some people the wrong way, but it's really cleverly done. I actually really, really, sorry, I'm kind of starting just a little bit, trying to think of where the story goes. It's been a while since I've actually ran through the whole thing. I ran through the whole thing in about 4 or 5 hours.
And it's not bad for a...
That's actually pretty good
for a fighting game. I think that's pretty standard for run through. But it's
on,
single story, right? So each character does not have its own unique...
Right.
It's like the last Mortal Kombat where it like switches between characters in the...
Yes.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's a really cool...
So if it's all said and done, which one are some of your favorite fighters?
I know some people are going to hate me for saying this, especially because I've been... I've been a little hypocritical about him on Twitter, but I really like Deathstroke. Just because he has those ranged attacks, he's very newcomer friendly, but it's like I said, it's so easy to spam a lot of his rifle attacks and all that type of thing.
And what's the counterpunch? So if someone's out there playing with him, what's your counterpunch to him?
Aquaman.
Aquaman is a very good fighter in this game, oddly enough. And some of the special attacks are really cool. Aquaman throws a shark at you.
That's right. Well, with freaking lasers.
As I say, with or without the lasers, because that's the important thing. Right?
We'll get to that a little later, but, shoot.
Yes.
Actually, I've just gone with Deathstroke and gone with Batman a couple of times. But using the kind of B button attacks where they'll each have like either a trait boost, Batman will get like 3 mechanical bats that you can just throw at your opponent, and it's really easy to create combos out of that. So.
And Ben, both of you guys over there have been playing Poker Night 2.
Yes.
Jeff's eyes light up. By the way, for those of you who don't know, Jeff likes to play poker.
I do like to play poker.
And he's good at it.
I'll
tell you, Poker Night 2 was so much better than anything I expected it to be.
It is.
Set it up, by the way. By the way, Poker Night 2 is a Texas Hold'em game.
Yeah.
And it is. It sounds like.
They've got Omaha in there as well now, this time. So you can play, although, you know, I am a Texas Hold'em player. Omaha is still one of those games that bakes my noodle a little bit, like the high-low crap.
Okay. It's just a novelty. It's all right.
I know. I'm never going to enter
the... Hold'em used to be a novelty. Now
it's the ultimate poker sport.
Yeah.
So, yes, it is... Okay, so you're playing with, like the original Poker Night, you're playing poker single-player game against 4 other players, and they're all from, you know, totally disparate... you know, either animated shows or other video games or whatever. So you're in this one, you're playing against Sam from Sam and Max. You're playing against Ash from Evil Dead. Brock Samson from Venture Brothers,
which is awesome.
They're all very.
Please tell me that when Ash has like a pair of kings, he says, "Hail to the king, baby."
I haven't heard him say that yet.
That references to the king are in there. In fact, what's cool is they all, there's a bunch of unlockables in the game, so you can go through, and as you win tournaments, you can earn tokens, which allow you to buy, you know, different themed rooms and decks of cards and chips. And those, when you put, for example, the Borderlands theme up, it affects everything visually and gives you some unique dialogue and stuff. So it's pretty cool, and it kind of incentivizes you to play through in each of the different.
And the first person that gets knocked out is always knocked out to the theme that you have in. If you have the Borderlands theme, Steve will come in and he'll blast somebody with a bazooka. It's really funny.
Or the Necronomicon will come in and like swallow somebody up or whatever. The dialogue, it's very, very similar to the first Poker Night for me in that the dialogue is brilliant. The presentation is awesome. Oh, GLaDOS is the director or is the dealer. So she like comes down and is doing commentary throughout the whole thing as well.
And that's a great touch because once it comes down to a one-on-one, that way the other character is not talking to himself. Like,
yeah.
They're just talking to GLaDOS.
It does allow
Here
a little
is
bit.
Here is the turn.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she's like tons of jokes. There's after.
Oh, by the way, the dialogue. Yes. Oh.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
That was well done.
That was a very good GLaDOS.
The dialogue that GLaDOS and Claptrap have with each other, because Claptrap tries to flirt with her every now and then. It's
of course.
Great.
Sure. Yeah. No, there's some really, really clever stuff, some really good in jokes. Now,
hey, GLaDOS, look at me. I'm dancing.
I will say, however, on the downside.
Okay.
As a big poker player, this is far more akin to playing on Zynga poker than it is playing actual. The AI is suspect at best and downright
idiotic.
Yeah, random seeming.
Are there like levels you can set a level?
There's no difficulty level system.
Don't go from here to the say poker room at the Bellagio.
Correct. Yes. No. Because the deal is that
you're like. There's no robots in Vegas. What's going on? So strange.
There are things like tells, like certain players will do tells and stuff, which is kind of gimmicky or whatever. But you can buy people at the table drinks to sort of emphasize those tells. It's not nearly as cool as it sounds. You're not going to see any of the characters getting loaded or anything while they're.
I wish.
Is this really just come in and hang out and watch the funny writing and animations that we came up with? And
well,
it's not really.
They do incentivize
it's the
you
battle
to
battle chess of poker.
It's not even that. Like here's the thing that really pissed me off because you're playing and I'm playing and I probably played this for a bunch of hours because sometimes I just leave it on and I'll go play a hand and then come back. But it's you get the sense that so Sam's the smarter player and. You know, Ash is always hyper aggressive and Brock is kind of an idiot. And like you kind of get the sense and then they will do stuff that completely proves any of that wrong. Like you're like, oh, Sam's the smart player and he's going all in against me with six deuce off suit and I've got pocket queens or whatever. And it's like, I mean, I get it. And this is after me as the player playing super conservatively just so I can get an idea of what the other players are doing. So sadly, I don't know. As a poker fan, I can recommend the experience from a presentational and humor standpoint, and you know, but from a poker AI side,
go elsewhere.
Yeah, go elsewhere. You're not going to get a real game of cards here.
All right, folks, you have probably guessed already. It's time for you to adjust the tracking on your tape player because when we come back,
the main event,
Blood Dragon. Jump.
Inside out, it's wiggin' and wiggin' and wiggin' and whack. I come stumble with something pumping to keep you jumping. R&B rap is war crap is what I'm dumping. Ain't nothing except about crisscross we all at. So when the eggs do they rock, say believe it.
It's a little tribute there to Chris Kelly, who unfortunately left the world here this past week. So it also kind of helps on our time travel. Now we're back to the 90s.
Yeah.
And now,
just a little farther.
We can get back to the 80s and Vector Graphics and Blood Dragon.
Yeah.
When we talked, first of all, Blood Dragon, if you haven't heard the awesome storm, because by the way, this is the way to launch a game like this, is you show it like 3 weeks ago, you get people hyped for it, and then it's out, and you're ready, and here it is.
And it's $15.
And it's $15. Yeah, it's $15.
It's a good way to launch
a game.
Doesn't
hurt, yeah.
But I mean, like, the excitement part is, like, I was so excited for it, and then, earlier this week on Monday night, I was like, shit, Blood Dragon's out tomorrow. Yeah. Awesome! Because I had already been, like, tweaked and excited for it. So I think that's really cool. This is a Far Cry 3 total conversion. I mean, really, it is what it is.
It's standalone, too.
It's a standalone thing. It's like 1.3 gig, costs you $15. You can only get it on digital download. So we've all been playing it. The idea here is a 80s...
Take the 80s, throw it into a blender, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it's as if you put in a VHS tape of, like... The movies that were ripping off Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Definitely.
In the 80s.
Now, 80s action movies specifically. Right. But
oh, yeah. Like that crazy, awful Tom Selleck one with the little robots that look like spiders.
A Runaway. Runaway.
Yes. Yeah, oh, my God.
What movie is that?
It's actually... Wait, who's the bad guy in that? That's another big actor. Silver or some shit? Or?
Oh, is it? I thought it was...
We have the internet now, folks. Yeah. We can look this up. However, let's move on and talk about Blood Dragon, because it has, among other things, blood dragons, which are giant reptiles with, like, neon glowing backs, and they shoot blast lasers out of their mouths.
Duh.
Which is awesome.
As if you had to explain that. You said blood dragons.
The genius of this game is exactly what I expected from the previews, is that they took the Far Cry 3 engine... And they laid over the top of it a whole new scheme of how to play the game. But there are a lot of subtleties.
With a heavy dose of humor.
Heavy dose of humor.
It is exactly... Jeff and I were talking about this. It is exactly what Duke Nukem should have been.
Called that?
Yeah.
It should have been. If this literally had the title Duke Nukem with no other changes whatsoever to it, it would be great. We would all be like, Duke Nukem is back!
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we would.
We absolutely would.
I mean, they don't have to change anything other than the name.
And this is how you do funny, referential 80s humor that doesn't involve throwing poop at stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
But bottom line is, the game under the hood here is still up to snuff. This is a good game.
Oh, yeah.
As a matter of fact, it's kind of hard in places.
It is hard in places. You know what? I have to – my only negative is that I found the graphical style, while fun and effective and really – an awesome take, it's just not a place I like being in as much as actual Far Cry 3. When I'm playing it, I'm like, it's dark. It's kind of hard to see
things. Which is, I think, works to the advantage that it's a much shorter experience. Right. It's bite-sized, fairly bite-sized.
Right.
So. Well, look, this was done quickly. They didn't put the time into the texture maps. They didn't do as much.
Right.
But it's all dark and purple and blue and purple and, like,
neon.
But they nail so many great things. They nail, like, all the audio cues are so wonderful. Like, the way the bad guys talk with that, like,
effective,
80s.
Cybermen.
Yeah.
Wing our cyber. You know, that kind
of. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that's cool about it is touching on the underlying. We've all seen. I think people who have been excited about it have seen the atmospheric treatment of it. The game is really pretty fun. Like
it's Far Cry.
The comic book overlay, the after Vietnam War to save the world sort of, like,
in the late 20th century.
Yeah.
Story is enough to hold it together. It's cool because this version of Far Cry, for one thing, not just because of the blood dragons, just in general, it's a more dangerous island. Mm-hmm. And then the dragons add a whole other wrinkle to the game, because they can also be used in sort of creative ways to take out enemies.
Yeah.
You can lure them different places. You can play little cat and mouse games with the dragons, where you attract them to you and then kind of stealth and try to get away from them after leading them into a bunch of cyber guys or into a base.
Right.
And they've obviously thought about that, because one of the things you learn right off the bat is that you can rip the hearts out of out of the enemies and use them for bait to lure the dragons into places.
Right.
I just think that it doesn't deserve, there's not a whole lot more to talk about.
Right.
Because it is exactly what it appears to be on the surface of it.
And if you were born, I mean, if you are in our age range, or you appreciate the 80s as much as we do, this does it's so 80s referential. They are literally dropping a obscure 80s reference, maybe a quote without any context from an 80s movie that you will totally recognize if you, you know, lived through that era. And it's amazing. It's like, it's almost like, oh, you know, they're just playing with your nostalgia centers and going, oh, do you remember this? Oh, not that. Okay, do you remember this? Remember this? Remember this? And it's like,
I was saying, like, coming directly off of having read Ready Player One, mm-hmm. I feel like when I started this game and every night since then that I've literally been jacking into the Oasis. It's like I am jacking into the Oasis and playing one of the worlds because right. that's what this is.
Yeah, right.
And it's pitch perfect on that
Michael Biehn world.
It's on that wavelength so well, and it's fantastic. And then at the same time, the actual part where I'm holding a controller and playing the shooter part is really fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun and well put together. And we were talking about, you know,
the weapons feel neat, like, and different than, you know, they feel sci-fi and fun.
Well, and you start off with not right off, but you get a pretty big arsenal right away, more or less.
And the enemy AI is refreshingly competent. Like I was basically just pulling a sniper rifle at one point, just kind of picking off people at the dam, and I didn't realize it, but a couple minutes later, there were guys coming after me, and I go, "Oh, they found me. They kind of saw where the bullet trail was coming from," and I was really surprised.
Laser trail, excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry, laser trail off of my Cobra Khan sniper rifle.
Right. The Cobra Khan is badass.
That's right.
Don't mess with the Cobra Khan. I think they did some other nice tricks in here. You know, they streamlined the garrison capture system, so they still have the same scenario of capturing garrisons around the island. But now, when you do that, that unlocks a couple of mission types. One of them is a sort of rescue the scientist deal, which is a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and the other of them is the old kill a high value target sort of thing. Both of these are from Far Cry 3. It's nothing new. But when you do these, it just unlocks the weapon upgrade that you can then go buy at the ammo store thing, which is now like a vending machine. It looks like a
it's a lot I mean, to the game's benefit, because I don't think it would, you know, having that skill progression that Far Cry 3 had wouldn't have benefited this game at all, but it does utilize the core systems that were in that game very, very well and streamline some of them. So it's very cool.
I want to see how this game – I want to see the sales for Far Cry 3 for the next couple of months, because I hadn't actually played it, but playing Blood Dragon, I want to go back and play Far Cry 3.
Dude, you got to play Far Cry 3. Far Cry 3 is really solid.
And I think it's a better game than Blood Dragon. I mean, obviously, you're talking like a full $60 game, right? 15 one.
I can't say better. I just think it's real different.
Well, it is real different.
I'm having so much fun playing this game because it's just fucking stupid fun. Yeah. And stupid fun is awesome.
And I'm curious as to how many people are going to have that same kind of reaction that have never played a Far Cry game before, picked up Blood Dragon just because it's $15, and played through and go, huh, wonder what I'm missing with this Far Cry 3. I think I'll go back and try it.
Just as a general note, play Far Cry 3.
Yeah.
Just go play it.
Far Cry 3 takes itself seriously. Yeah. As in a B movie sort of way. And you know, even like Call of Duties, they take them like as preposterous as they are, and as much as you know you're playing a video game, they still take themselves seriously. And as you play them for more than like a half hour and start to get into the beat of the game, you start to take them seriously. You're not going to take this seriously,
right?
And that's the thing, is like it revels in you not taking it seriously. It doesn't even believe in a fourth wall. It's like constantly talking to you about how fucking ridiculous it is.
There's a button to flip off. There's a button to flip the bird. I mean, how serious is it?
Yeah, and he's complaining. You know, right at the beginning, he complained.
Oh, the tutorial. Oh, the tutorial's so great.
Yeah. It's fantastic in that.
My laugh out loud moment was after you take the first encampment. This is super minor spoiler, but like there's some dialogue, and the HUD is basically telling you, okay, for our next base, you can go in here, or you can sneak around the back. But and then you hear Michael Biehn cut in. He's like, "What did he say? Fuck! I just lost the joke." No, he's like,
"I think I know what you're thinking of too."
Oh, shit! I totally blew this. That doesn't happen often. Yeah, no spoiler. No.
He's like, "Shut up, fucking HUD."
He's like, fuck you, HUD. I do what I want.
Yeah, right.
He starts kill, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He does do that. He actually does the blah, blah. He actually does do that. Kill, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of Blood Dragon right there, is it doesn't need any more explanation. It doesn't need any more, you know.
Maybe a slight appreciation or a deep appreciation of the 80s, but.
Yeah, and it's cool. It's cool that you are this superpower soldier because you could, you know, you want to swim. Awesome. Go swimming.
You're half man, half robot, all cyber soldier.
just be careful.
That's right, baby.
Just be careful when you go swimming because there are cyber sharks.
There are cyber sharks. Yes. There are lots of cyber animals, except for the boars.
Oh, that's right, huh? Why is that?
You obviously haven't gone.
No.
Okay, so one of the best parts of the game is going into the like the Infopedia thing and reading descriptions for everything. Oh. The descriptions, every one of them is part and parcel of the experience.
Comedy gold. Okay.
Yeah, they are all part of the experience. All
right.
It's kind of a cool. It's a cool adaptation. We've talked about this before. Like how many open world games could go this route. You know, like how many of them could you actually take a slice and have something fun with them like this? Like you could, the more I thought about it, you could definitely do some really quirky, hilarious, off the cuff Skyrim sort of thing. Like crazy fantasy world, just as silly, just as over the top, and have a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah. Macho Man coming to get you.
best mod ever. It does kind of ruin the ambiance a bit.
That is a good
it's
mod.
It's pretty awesome.
The best is when the dragon is so far away and he's like, ooh, yeah.
He's so like far away.
by the way, if you're not knowing what Jeff's talking about, he's talking about the Macho Man Randy Savage voice pack that you can add to
not
the
not just voice, his whole head is the dragon.
You can get the whole head of the dragon, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little scary. All right. So another great purveyor of open world games is the fantastic folks at Rockstar. I'm kind of in that. I'm still in that 80s headspace. I mean, Blood Dragon's too much fun. Anyway, great character vignettes. I think one of the things that came up. So three.
Jeez,
if you haven't seen the videos this week, there are three. There's videos for each of the three characters. And the thing that jumped out at me about this is that every other open world game that we wind up talking about the things in the environment and the things you'll be able to do. And
well,
the
that's
world.
What they started talking about. Remember?
And that's what they started talking about.
12 times bigger than the biggest thing you've ever seen. 4 times deeper than the deepest place you've ever touched. You know, like it was all
I've
that.
I've touched some pretty deep places.
You touch me deeply every evening. But like that's what they started with is like we're creating the most massive, intense, like.
Well, and for a moment you forgot. World. So I want to page back because the thing that to me stands out about Rockstar is that in these open world environments, they have no rival in their ability to create characters. And that's what has made their games so great. Even going back, you know, to when Grand Theft Auto 3 kicked off, even you could even maybe argue with Grand Theft Auto 2, although those were much different sorts of games, but definitely Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City and San Andreas Bully.
Yeah. And Red Dead.
Which was what I was going to say is like in retrospect, now thinking about it, I think Red Dead might be my favorite game this generation.
I think you would have firm ground to stand on.
That is definitely mine.
I was thinking back on it and like and
this is I got into a big Twitter argument with Brian Brushwood when he played BioShock Infinite and he said the greatest storytelling in the history of video games and I went, I don't even think it's the greatest storytelling in the history of like the last 2 years, Red Dead. I think Red Dead Redemption is
part of Red Dead's strength for me was the self-authored storylines where you're between missions and that game compels me to go off and hunt and do little optional side quests and stuff because there's.
But I think that's cool. But the John Marston, the John Marston story in and of itself, even if it was only a Critical Path story, could be a game.
Weren't you real negative on Mexico?
I was negative on how long it drew out.
Right.
And I thought it required a lot of back and forthing. But thinking about it in terms of the overall experience and especially nailing the ending. That is the sort of like dismount from the balance beam that gets the judges going, oh, that's a 10. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you stuck the landing, totally stuck the ending of that, which is
currently
really impressive.
With the women's gymnastic reference.
I don't know. I didn't. But like, that's so uncommon to get the ending so right.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about it. Like the John Marston character is amazing. And the stuff Jeff's talking about is the stuff usually that I get lost in. And I did a lot of the side mission stuff. But this was the rare case where that story thread is so strong that every time I went off and did something, instead of the game unraveling, it just contributed to my enjoyment of the character. And I went naturally back into the character without consciously even thinking about it.
And what you're saying is why I have so much more confidence in GTA 5 than I have ever had in a GTA game. I have wanted to love since 3 was the
the peak of my GTA. It went from 0 to 60 and then back to 0. I didn't really care about 2. 3 was amazing. And then even by Vice City, I was sort of like, I didn't have an attachment to that series that a lot of people gained.
Man, I don't know how you...
I know, but having played Red Dead and loving it as much as I did, it gives me a whole lot of enthusiasm and hope for that 5 is sort of more like Red Dead than it is like 4. And seeing those trailers just blew me away. And how you have 3 such disparate contextual milieus that these characters are coming from, and each of them seems to be drawn with such an accurate brush, you know? And
so nails it.
Well, and how all that's going to – this could be 3 games, and that's all going to be in one game?
Yeah, presentationally, you know, vocal performances again. Wow, this feels like a – you know, you can give me Grand Theft Auto the movie in that engine, and I would watch it probably.
But, you know, I have to give Christian Spicer credit because he tweeted something that I think I've been thinking is I want to live in a world where Rockstar games are as good as Rockstar trailers, which is a little bit snarky and cynical to say, but there's some truth to the GTA, at least from GTA 4. Like, I never had as much fun playing that game as I wished I had based on what the game had to offer.
When was the last time you tried that game? Because the biggest problem with GTA 5 or 4 is that the beginning of that thing is the slowest burn ever. Like, I think it's like 5 missions in, you get a gun, or 6 missions in. Like, not that should be the focus of it, but it's like you're learning to drive a cab and you're taking your cousin around.
And
it's
you're answering the phone for some reason.
And it's cool, but it's not what most people go into a GTA game for initially. You know, when they crack the plastic, they want to get in there and start causing some mayhem and do all that sort of stuff. And it's a really slow burn. And it's
loved what the hell is it called? The biker
Lost in the Damned.
Lost in the Damned and Ballad of Gay Tony. Those are both
excellent.
And which everybody noted were more focused,
right,
and more tightly organized around that core experience.
Mm-hmm. And if you think of those 3 things in the same way that we may be getting 3 disparate chapters here, I think it's very encouraging that like they managed to fit 3 very unique stories in the same universe that all sort of bounced off each other peripherally.
Well, do you guys remember seeing something early on when they were first talking about the 3 character thing where one of those characters actually ends up being the main antagonist of the game? You are actually playing as both the protagonist and the antagonist. And that, you know, that develops over the course of the story.
That's cool.
That could be cool.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not 100%. That's pretty early stuff that I'm pulling out of my head from a while ago. There is some interesting new details. Have you guys seen the sort of follow-up to the trailer releases? Rockstar embargoed some info for the next.
Oh, yeah. I've been reading all the previews.
Dude. Okay, so.
So, by the way, are you going to talk about the.
We can talk about – yeah. That's definitely going to get
– put your pants back on, guy. Jesus.
Because I was like, what?
Dude. Okay. So let me just run down a quick list and we can go back and cover anything that we found interesting. The in-game economy will actually matter this time.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is you will earn a lot of money by doing these big heists and less money for doing the smaller heists. But that if you want to buy an F-16, it's going to be something. It's going to be ridiculously expensive.
So the way they said they're going to make the in-game economy matter is by having things that cost really, really tons of money.
Mm-hmm. Like you can buy properties. You can buy a cab company.
I'm not sure that completely in and of itself makes it.
No, but I do like the return of that concept from like Vice City. Like, I like being able to buy places and
feel like
I was growing my empire and stuff. Character specific skills. So each of the characters is going to have their own little, you know, thing that is unique to them. So, you know,
hillbilly power, engage.
Well, his hillbilly power is like a rage beat 'em up power that, you know,
he can brawl without losing stamina. So he can basically go fucking batshit insane and beat the crap out of people.
Right. Just take some PCP and you're all good to go. And then Vincent is, you know, he's the rich mob guy that's like sick of his life or whatever. He can slow down time during gunplay and
just like real rich people.
Yeah. And Franklin, he's the wheel man, the repo man. So he can slow down time when he's driving. So if you're going to, you know, in a hairy getaway or whatever, that's pretty cool. And then
hearkening back to San Andreas, what's cool about that multi skill based player buildup thing is, like, remember in San Andreas, what you ate mattered and you got fat, but it was really exaggerated. In 5, what you do in the game, you get better at. So if you go swim, you get better at swimming. If you drive a lot, you'll actually be able to drive better.
With those characters. Like, those characters each have their own skill stats and their own bankrolls. So when the economy is like—
I just want to be able to play co-op.
Well, I'm
well,
sure
they're it's not that in the single player, but that
I know, but that's what I want.
But there is going to be some open world multiplayer of some sort.
I want to be able to you jump in as the wheel man, I jump in as the other dude.
We did that in 4. We did that in 4.
No, not I want to in the
single story.
You want the in the game, okay?
Heist planning sounds amazing because you know,
it's hard for me to believe that they're going to be able to pull off what they're promising with heist planning because it sounds so great.
They're like, okay,
it's too good to be true.
Pick your getaway car, place the location of your getaway car, choose the
higher
equipment,
underlings.
Higher underlings, cheaper underlings may screw you up mid-mission. I mean, like,
but
that's
like,
just
it,
so
well,
good.
You were saying before, too, about like, well, this one needs an armored car, so go in the world and acquire an armored car. We're not going to tell you how.
It's not a mission.
It's
like,
just like,
go do it.
The world is there. The world is your oyster. Go find the pearl
dude,
in it somewhere.
That's GTA. That's the thing that's awesome.
Well, that's
GTA.
The thing we always wanted GTA to be, and I don't think it really was. I mean, people used to like set up certain things.
There were similar things like the cop. Like there were some missions in 4 where you're like, you need to procure a cop car to go to the next stage of this mission. So you'd actually have to go find a cop car in the world and jack it. Not
right.
You wouldn't have an objective mark or anything. But this is like the next level.
What I'm hoping for, what I truly want, and I don't know if it's unrealistic of me to want this so badly, but I want there to be. I want them to strip away those invisible walls that are inside each mission so that if I want to really think outside the box and attempt this heist in a really unorthodox way, I can't just like
I'm going to leave this firefight, go to the airport, get in a jumbo jet and crash that shit right into the
Too
soon, but yes.
Yes.
maybe both of us should do this, but we should play Grand Theft Auto 4 again, because it had those things. It may not have had the support pieces in place, but it had those things in the main line. Just in one of the articles, because we're running a series of articles on Shaq right now about the DNA of Grand Theft Auto, a bunch of Shaqers were telling stories about things they had done in 4, and one of the ones that came up that a couple of them had shared was this mob boss hit that was pretty tough. And one of them said, you know, I couldn't get it, I couldn't solve it. So finally what I did was I followed the guy on his daily routine and learned what his routine was, like where his driver picked him up, where his home was, where he dropped him off, like, so now you're like basically being an assassin. And the next day he went and stole a semi truck, and he parked the semi truck across the front of the dude's house where the limo would usually pull up. So the limo couldn't pull up there. Now, knowing that the limo couldn't pull up there, he knew where he was going to have the guy dropped off was behind where the limo was.
Right.
So he stole an SUV. And when the limo came up and was stuck and couldn't get to the spot, and he had to get out, and instead of getting out in front of his house where he was more protected, he was getting out down the street. He came flying down the street in the SUV, ran over all the bodyguards, hopped out of the SUV, clocked the guy, stole a car, and made his getaway. Another guy was like, no, you know, I didn't even think about that, but I did see where he was getting picked up, and before he could get out of like the gated parking lot where he was, I blocked the gated parking lot, tossed 5 grenades in there, and then made my getaway by jumping over the edge of a cliff. So it already has that sort of
deal. Yes, and I love all that. I love all that, and I want them to follow that further so that I'm not – if I'm in a high-speed chase and I make a left turn in Albuquerque – it doesn't go, you've lost him, mission over. It goes, find that guy. Or, you know, if I choose to start the mission over, I can. But it's more like it's all happening and I got to deal with whatever situation I'm in. So it's not just sort of like you failed the mission.
There are some times where, like, look, I mean, because based on the story, look, if the guy's trying to get someplace and pull an alarm or do something like that and he gets away, well, what are you going to do?
I understand. I just find that stuff, especially in GTA 4, which I felt – the driving was wonky and the shooting was wonky, and I found all that so frustrating that I just didn't want to end up playing.
Now, nobody has any tangibles on either of these things, but both of those, specifically the shooting and the driving, are supposed to be something that they really are working on.
Shooting in Red Dead was much improved and a lot of fun, actually.
Well, and you have Max Payne has come out. Max Payne 3 has come out since then, which is another, you know, looks like some of those character animations and stuff.
Well, Max Payne definitely not open world, though.
No, but the combat, like the gunplay itself.
I mean, look, they've improved on those difficult elements in a multiplayer, in an open world, large scale environment in each version. From 3 to Vice City, it got better. From Vice City to San Andreas, it got better. From San Andreas to 4, it got better.
Baby steps, but yes.
I just have to rattle these off. These are some of the optional activities that you can do. You know, so things you can do outside of missions. These are not optional missions, but they're optional things. Skydiving, scuba diving. Okay, we know those things. Nine-hole golf, including club selection, yoga, tennis, triathlons, bike races, picking up hitchhikers, base jumping, ATM robberies, getting on a fake tour bus and going to see a fake tour of the stars thing in the hills.
That sounds like something I see in Saints Row.
And here's the thing I really don't get. The other way to earn money besides heists is to go treasure diving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is to go jump in the ocean and go treasure diving off the coast of Los Angeles. Los Santos. Like, where did that idea come from?
Yeah,
well,
they're Los Angeles? Like,
we built this whole ocean floor thing. What should we do with it, guys? Let's stick some stuff in there.
That is so, like, out of, like,
it's awesome.
Lightning
bolt
out of nowhere. Let's go diving and go treasure hunting.
I mean, I just want it to be as fun as my imagination makes it out to be.
It won't be. And
thanks, Jeff.
No, the problem and then I'll just wrap it up on my end. The core problem with GTA games and what they do so well is get you excited, and the stuff that it does do really well is freaking awesome. And then it makes you realize, oh, you know, I can't really go into every building, and I can't, you know, I want to interact with some of this other stuff. Even though I can do like 60 or 70 different things in this game, like I want to do like 20 or 30 more.
It gets your imagination going.
I hope they bridge that gap, though. They continue to bridge that.
I could not be more excited for this game.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Those trailers certainly put the love into me. They look so interesting and exciting.
I'm learning that I put down GTA 4 way too early because of the wonky shooting and the wonky gunplay. I didn't really play it for all that long. And around that same time that it came out was when Saints Row 2 hit.
Yep.
And Saints Row 2 introduced a co-op aspect, a lot more fun activities. But I think GTA 5 is going
to
nail it.
I still need to go play Saints Row the Third too. People always.
It's going to be so interesting that
it'll be in
September. Good. We're going to be all jazzed about new consoles right around the corner. It's going to be such an interesting time.
I'm already convinced that I will buy GTA 5
twice.
I bought every GTA game at least twice.
I just wish they would put it out on PC day and date. That'd be so great.
Give it 6 months after release.
All right, let's explode your imagination with finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Yeah, I hope she runs a compressor on that. Pretty hot in there. All right, finishing moves. I'll start her off. Jeff, are you here next week?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Uh-oh. I'm not here next week then.
Not anymore.
So I played a few hours of Neverwinter this past week.
I've heard.
And a subject I wanted to bring up in addition to letting me talk about that for a minute was where Dungeons & Dragons even sits in the scheme of games relevance, both tabletop and video games, in 2013. Because this game, to me, has no real need to say Dungeons & Dragons on it. And it's a serviceable enough action free-to-play massively multiplayer online role-playing game that looks okay. It's kind of muddy. It's certainly not setting any visual standards.
It's no Terra, am I right, Jeff?
Right.
Well, it also doesn't have Lolitas in it, but that's
it's
a whole other.
You're also right. Correct, sir.
But my take on Neverwinter, if you're interested, is there's always that idea of it's free to play, so you got nothing to lose by installing it. But, you know, you do have your time. And this is one of those cases where, you know, I put about 4 hours into it. If, Jeff, you want to check it out a little bit, I'll play a little more this week. Because I want to talk about the Dungeons & Dragons element of it. You got nothing to lose. Just install it.
Jeff is super excited about this assignment.
Or you could just crib off Alex.
Yeah, I've definitely had a lot of information from Alex, and that guy loves every MMO, and he's not enjoying it.
It's just, it's flat. It's missing any sort of that hook that gets you, and that's a shame because it's wearing both Dungeons & Dragons and Neverwinter, and those are two proud names, and to me, that was really upsetting. Mm. Who would like to go next?
I'll go next. I have gotten some fun feedback last week. A surprising number of people, surprising to me, supported my iTunes rage, which felt very good to have that support. And I've gotten a number of people sending me potential replacements for iTunes. None of them yet are the answer. You know, I still yearn that.
If only Apple would make something.
Right. But I also got some interesting feedback about what I said about negatively about Monopoly. And I have to point out, there is a Monopoly game that is excellent, and it is called Monopoly Deal. And it is a card game only. There is actually no board, but it's fantastic. It's a quick, easy, great party game if you're looking for a great party game. It's cheap, and it takes Monopoly and makes it good by making a completely different game with just a Monopoly skin, and it's excellent. Another board game, quick hit, that you guys might want to check out on this game, on this show, if you remember me mentioning a sci-fi board game called Eclipse that I was recommending highly. Well, that has just been turned into an iOS version, and it's excellent. So if you want to check it out before investing, it's a pretty expensive board game. You can check out the iOS version. It's much less expensive, and they did a great job converting it over. It's a really fun resource management space-themed explore space, shoot your opponents and manage your resources. Really cool.
Ozzy, would you like to go next?
All right. One more note on the Nintendo front is that they quietly rolled out the Virtual Console for the Wii U. And I want to bang my head against the table because, once again, they're staggering the Virtual Console releases. So you're only going to see about 8 or 9 games available. A few good ones in there like Super Mario World and all that. But the reason I want to bring it up is because right now you can get Kirby's Adventure for 30 cents, which is a great game in itself. And, you know, celebrating its 20th anniversary. Also,
30 cents. Yeah, it's too expensive.
Yeah, I know. You only have a quarter on you.
Yeah.
But 2 weeks from now, or I'm pretty sure it's 2 weeks from now, if not 3 weeks, Super Metroid, 30 cents. And if you've never played that game, first of all, slap yourself silly and then go get it.
Well, slap yourself silly, you know, carefully. Be careful about that, you know. We cannot be responsible for any injury,
any
you may
silliness
call
that may result from slapping yourself,
pummeling yourself. Yes,
Jeff, you get to bring it home.
All right, Star Command is awesome.
In space,
yes, it is an iOS game that just came out recently. I've been looking forward to it for a while, but if you like FTL, this is definitely worth a look. It is basically you build your own starship and crew, and then go out and explore the vast reaches of space and encounter aliens and battle them and. There's ship-to-ship combat. There's aliens getting beamed on board. You know, customization of, you know, ship has a bunch of different rooms and you can build stuff. It's got a really neat mechanic that you actually buy everything in the game with tokens, but this is not an IAP game. So by doing actions, you get, you know, engineer tokens or assault tokens or science tokens, and you can use those to upgrade rooms and your dudes and everything. Very, very cool. Surprisingly challenging. It is also, unlike FTL, it is linear. So there seems to be an actual story progression to it. You're actually encountering the same set of missions, but with different variables every time you play. So pretty cool. I mean, I'm really enjoying the hell out of it, and it gets pretty tough. So definitely check it out if it sounds interesting.
Awesome. All right, folks, you've reached the end of the show. By the way, if you like what you hear on the show, would love if you would take a couple minutes and hop over to iTunes and give us a review. And if you don't like what you hear, you have constructive criticism, head over to the Shack News show thread, and I am always reading them, and we always try to improve on the show. If you just want to, you know, run some smack, tell me what I didn't pronounce right, or otherwise insult any of the cast and crew, you can do that on Twitter or NeoGaff.
We're saying that? That's what we're saying?
That's
awesome.
Well, why not?
They're going to do it
they're
anyway.
They're going to do it anyway. Right. It's part of the fun of being a public dartboard.
All right.
Right?
I actually blocked the first person I've ever blocked. I blocked somebody this week on Twitter.
You did?
Yeah. Oh.
You always remember your first.
Yeah.
Nice.
I try to forget.
Well done. Thanks to Ozzy and Jeff, of course. Ozzy will see you around soon. Jeff will hopefully see you around soon as well.
Yeah, whenever you want me, I'll be here.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? We should thank, of course, the booth and everyone helping us out here at the Atlantis Group. Let's get out of here. Let's go home. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. That's your weekend.
Arriba!
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you. By the way, is it sacrilege?
Yes.
I bought the 53% off version of the Blu-rays of 4, 5, and 6.
Why is that? I guess, at this point, all bets are off when it comes to Star Wars. There's no such thing as sacrilege. We are in a whole new world of raping that franchise.
No, and it's good to own those because every once in a while you got to pop them in and go, oh, yeah, these are really that bad.
Yeah.
Not everybody owns the Laserdiscs of the originals.
Right?
Right.
Or I mean, how am I even going to play a VHS tape?
Yeah, it's
impossible. I mean, I haven't had a VHS tape player in years. So, anyway, that's your Weekend Confirmed, everybody. Till next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard, don't you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. Body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.